trigger warning for accidental outing, internal homophobia, and domestic abuse.
And external homophobia, too. All the homophobia. We're sorry, guys.
It's called smut. Give me smut and nothing but a dirty novel I can't shut if it's uncut and unsut.
I did have podcast thoughts.
Okay, tell me
So
everything.
I have one.
Wait, hold on. Ooh.
Ooh. I have like a sexy one. Okay. I have a really weird one, and then I have just a fun one. So okay. What are you guys in the mood for?
I would like you to combine all three at the same time.
Yes.
And then confuse us with which is which. No, I think you should surprise us, though, and not tell us, and then we guess which one was which.
Yeah.
So yeah. Say all three of them, and
or
then...
Just say your first one, and I'll be like, ooh, that was the weird one. And you're going to be like, no, that was the sexy one.
Okay. I saw on TikTok somebody draw out the mechanics of a fivesome. One girl, four guys.
Incredible.
And I wanted to know... And I immediately was like, I don't, because I famously do not like reverse harems, but I was like, I kind of want to read the scene at least. And,
right,
and
see what happens.
That's like. So I wanted to know if that was something, if you ever saw or like heard of a thing
a five
that's so random that you're like, well, now I got to read this book or see this movie or something like that. So that's one of the thoughts.
Okay.
The other, another thought was celebrity crushes. Like now and then. So do you still have somebody?
That movie's great. Rosie O'Donnell.
Yeah.
Was my crush.
But that you like them, you like them then and now. Because
ooh,
I
they've
was
stayed.
I've been watching
your heart.
Pod Meets World, Boy Meets World.
Oh,
podcast.
Yeah.
And I
the Lawrence
a,
Bros.
Yeah.
No. Boy Meets World. This
Boy
is,
Meets World.
Topanga and
oh, yeah.
Yes. And I had a big crush on Eric, who is played by Will Friedle. And I'm still
who had a crush on Eric?
I never
he was the funny guy. He was
oh.
a funny guy.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, and I still
he did have good
him.
He did have good hair.
Yes.
It's Mr. Feeny all day.
And then the third one was at random points in my life I've been attracted to different members of Monty Python. What do you
As someone who has never been attracted to any member of Monty Python,
I got to think of funny guys.
Who started out the attraction
John Cleese.
John Cleese. That okay. Yeah, I could see that.
John
and
Cleese, easy.
Now where are we?
We're in a Michael Palin mode.
I gotta look.
In the middle.
I love John Cleese.
They're all
it's okay, you're fine.
They're all old men.
They're
all
there
old
for a
men.
Second.
They've been old men.
What was the second
forever.
Name?
Michael Palin. Palin.
They've been spiritually old men the entire time.
Oh, that guy is 1,000.
Wait,
he was 1,000 in the 60s.
No, he wasn't.
What
yes.
are you talking about?
Wait, are you looking at the right person?
He was born during World War II.
Are you looking at the right person?
Probably.
They were all born during World War II, Julie.
They're all so old.
They're all
yeah,
old.
They were all old when you were born, and yet here we are.
She still wants to be.
You still. Hey, you have to pick one is the
it,
thing.
My friend, my roommate, used to call it geriatrophilia, and I know that's not it. There's got to be a name for it.
For though, being for attracted being, to old men?
Yeah, like a cougar catcher.
Well, no,
yeah.
Okay, hold on. I'm not attracted to old
men. I mean,
men.
Let's be honest.
You're attracted
I'm
to
saying,
the members of Monty Python.
I'm not.
And Will Friedle.
First of all, Will Friedle is like 10 years older than us.
He's old.
It's giving Mr. Robinson.
You are married to someone who is 10 years older than you.
He's old. He's going gray. We've talked about it.
To be fair, Keenan has very young man energy.
Keenan does have young man
and
energy
I wouldn't
and
put
old
him,
man energy.
I wouldn't, he, oh, yeah. He's an old. But I mean, most young men. I've met 10-year-olds with old men energy.
Yeah.
My issue is Keenan does not look his age. These men look geriatric.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not saying it's the personality bang. It's not. I guess we're going with the weird one. This is the weird one, by the way. And this is what we're talking about.
Okay. You can't change it. You can't change it in post. You know very well that was the sexy one.
I mean, I'm attracted to I've been going through a salt burn thing.
Yeah.
And I
don't think he's attractive.
I am so attracted to Barry Keoghan.
No, I am. He's.
Have you seen Salt Burn?
His eyes never move.
Have you seen Salt Burn?
His eyes never
move. If you see Salt Burn, you will be attracted to Barry Keoghan.
I don't think I will.
Because he's such a weird little freak.
I am now conscious of how much my eyes move. I hate you for that.
No,
his eyes do move. He has dead eyes.
No, he doesn't.
He has dead eyes.
He doesn't.
My eyes move.
Listen, I think he's a fine actor. Good job, Barry Keoghan. He rose
from
nothing to
something. You're thinking of him in Killing of a Sacred Deer. Yes?
Never seen it. But also...
What do you know him from, then?
Nothing. I've never seen him in anything.
Okay. Watch him. Because he plays a weird little freaky man, and it's...
I've only seen him in still pictures, and his eyes did not move.
I've
seen...
Love it.
I've seen, like, things of... I've seen, like, clips, and he's always just, like, you know, he's moving his mouth.
I got you.
I'm going to send you some very specific clips from the movie.
Oh, I think everybody has Botox.
I don't think he does.
Yeah. I will say one thing I love about Chicago is being ugly is so embraced here that it kind of horseshoe effects on itself to where you become hot again.
Yeah.
Where you're like, damn.
That's how I feel about Barry Keoghan. Barry Keoghan is ugly hot.
Okay,
like I can see that. I am not attracted
like
to
a pug.
Yes, and in the movie in particular, he has like this like dommy energy that I respond very significantly to.
Take away the energy. Take away that whole character. Just him on the street.
I like him.
Interesting.
I have, but also I like Irish bone structure.
I'll also tell you, I'm not into sexy stuff enough because when you said dommy energy, I was like, oh, like Sopranos? Yes.
We talked about Lunch Meat and Tony Soprano. We can say, welcome to Femmes Reading Club. My name is Jess.
My name's Emily.
And I'm Julie Merica.
Welcome back.
Welcome.
Back. I interrupted your.
It has been.
You're doing great.
No, that was. It was. It's been like a month.
It's that weird little week between Christmas and New Year's. Everyone feels a little weird.
Mm-hmm. We did. The last episode we did was cuckolding, and that was via virtual Zoom.
Yeah.
Our first foray into that.
We were going to record like a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, and then COVID got in the way, and then holidays got in the way. So we're back. And that really, when it gets time to my story, I have a whole fucking thing to tell you, Julie, because I texted Jessica in all caps on Christmas Day, furious about my story and what had happened. So,
holiday spoiler.
The time was against me for some reason. In this last month, but
that's this time of year, I think, for everybody. Yeah. Actually, I was gonna say, based on this last week, people hate it, but I tend to not plan anything, so anything that I get done like this feels like bonus. That was free time.
I did it.
Yeah.
I was like, I did now that. I can do nothing
all day.
Yeah,
forever.
Anywho, coming out.
Coming out.
We still didn't get the rights to that. So.
Yeah. So
we said that in the end of cuckolding. We started singing that and I go, we don't have the rights.
No. So Julie, why this topic?
Well, I will say I froze last time.
Great.
And it wasn't the Zoom. It was me. I realized I don't know enough or I didn't know enough about fanfics to really understand what you meant by tropes. So I was thinking of things that turned me on.
Those are fine.
But those can be... Tropes.
And it worked. Yeah. It did work, but I have further research and dug deeper into things that turn me on and are tropes.
Great.
Which, that's kind of where I was going with this. I was like, this is a little of both. I've seen it as a trope.
Yeah.
But I kind of just fell back into something that was comfortable for me, but also like still could be more open-ended. So it could be wholesome if you want it to be, or it could be like whatever the fuck. It's kind of a big umbrella.
General. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a big umbrella term. It can mean literally anything.
Yeah. Literally.
Yeah. I had a fairly easy time finding a story. It was more there were so many that I had to narrow down and be like, what do I actually want to talk about in regards to coming out?
Because it's like a Cheesecake Factory menu.
Yeah.
That's too much. Doing too much.
And because like I know personally and also just from talking to friends that there is no one true way of coming out or journey or anything. And so it was more like, how do I want to talk, what kind of story do I want?
Yeah, it's not typically a party like a gender reveal.
No, like, not really.
Today's my day.
Why not?
We should.
That. Yeah.
We should do coming out.
I know
out
somebody
parties.
Who like did we a well, they were transitioning, so they did like a transition
That's
party.
That's fun.
But I was not, I don't know them well enough. I wasn't invited.
Wow. This is full shade.
But yeah, I am a straight white female, so I've never come out, so I don't really have much to say on it, and I feel like it wouldn't be okay for me to say anything on it because I don't
have opinions.
Say
your homophobic opinions, Emily.
No.
Say them on air.
But do it. So I'm not going to, I didn't do research this time is what I'm saying, because I don't have a personal experience, or not that you have to, but I just figured it'd be better.
For me to do it?
For you to do it.
Which it you is. Also, this should be very obvious, I think, but for some reason, I didn't realize that coming out is just the shortened version of coming out of the closet. And that's how that term originated.
Yeah,
I don't know. I just was like, yeah, coming out. Like,
cute.
you're coming out into the
and
world.
And you want the world to know.
And then I was like, oh, yeah, obviously, coming out.
Yeah, where were you coming out from before? You're like just out proverbially, like just in the.
Yeah, just coming out, just showing yourself, just being like, I'm like here. It. I've arrived. Yes. That's how I think my brain, I just never thought about it that hard. Mm-hmm. And then I Googled it for the podcast, and it's like a mixed metaphor of skeletons in the closet. Oh. And then coming out, your skeletons are coming out of the closet.
I was
you are
actually the wondering.
Yeah, you are the skeleton.
Why it's specifically the closet, not like the bedroom, not the whatever.
Yeah.
That makes so much more sense.
Yeah, I didn't put that together either. But yeah, it's like that is for many people their biggest skeleton.
Yeah.
And by coming out, you are letting the skeleton out of the closet. Oh. It varies so much depending on where you live, where you come from, who you are, what you're comfortable with.
Yeah.
Like no, there is no one right way or way it should be. It is a very personal thing.
100%.
For everybody. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like it's one of those things that, and that's why I kind of struggled to find a story too, because I was like, what kind of coming out story do I want to talk about?
I will say, when I was thinking about it, I wasn't necessarily thinking about the announcement, the celebration of it all. I was thinking more of the coming out for themselves, like the discovery of like, oh,
I the kissed, journey.
The Katy Perry, I kissed a girl and I liked
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we don't have the rights to that one either. I would have belted it. I need you to know that.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for seeing me.
Yeah, I hear you. I don't want you to get it sued, although that could put you on the map.
But yeah, I didn't really do any more research. I just wanted to
a
like.
Qui-con.
I just wanted to be like, it's a personal thing. It's a very important thing to many people. It's something that takes some getting to. I like. When you reach the point of coming out, I feel like there's already been a lot of emotional work usually that you've had to go through to get to that point. And I personally like wanted a story that was more about the like realizing that you need to come out.
Yes.
Like not even thinking that that is an aspect of your life. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh,
yeah.
Oh, I have gay feelings.
Yeah.
And needing to come to terms.
Real
with
talk.
Those.
I was not hoping for the dark coming out stories of like, I'm finally going to do it.
There's
stick
a
it
lot
to my conservative
of
families. Cause that is, it's so real.
That's,
it
that's
is.
But I'm also like
a big majority of them that are in the pop culture that have like gotten really famous
yeah.
are like, and so I also wanted to try and stay away from those.
Okay.
There's already so much like angst and mm-hmm. let's just have a happy gay couple.
Yeah, yeah. I love that. Yeah, that's what I'm in it for.
So that's what we're leaning into today, I think.
Cool.
Because yeah,
well, we're gonna try.
We're gonna try.
Fucking Kindle Unlimited burned me.
I can make
time.
Everything angsty, don't worry.
Oh, yeah. We can, and there will be angst because I'm me.
We're gonna put some My Chemical Romance in the bottom of this episode. Why don't we just underscoring yeah,
just
we
the...
do have the rights to that.
Yeah,
we'll play it backwards.
Okay, so I read two. Well, I read a lot of fics for this, but I read two that were very similar. They're from the same fandom. And so it was between those two, and I've landed on one of them. And so the one we're doing is called South Downs. It is by Summer of Spock. It's 19 chapters and was finished in July of 2021. And it's very popular within this fandom. So tags that are important: alternate universe, human. Alternate universe, actors. Sexuality crisis, internalized homophobia, and one instance of embarrassing spaghetti dancing.
I already hate that.
No notes.
Based on those tags, does anyone have a guess as to the fandom?
It's Star Trek.
No.
Whoa.
Oh. That's just the author's
the Spock.
Username.
Yeah, the Spock
the
really fucked
username.
Me.
Okay, wait.
Alternate universe, human. Alternate universe, actors.
So does the actor mean we're standing the people who play it, or we're standing
no.
the, their, what they're playing
they are
as
actors.
The actor?
In this,
okay.
In this story, it is an alternate
they
universe
are the actor.
Where these characters are actors and they are human.
Is it Star Wars?
No.
Oh. Ooh.
I was thinking like
the Orville. Tunnel. No, I'm just kidding.
We're all just thinking space. Okay, I got nothing.
I want to guess one more. Lilo and Stitch is
no.
universe.
Is it the Lion King and they're
think
not lions,
of a,
they're actors?
Think of a fandom with two male leads who have a lot of chemistry, who do not play humans.
21 Jump Street.
It is on Amazon Prime. The second season just ended. It was just renewed for a third season. Anything? Good Omens.
Oh, fuck. I should have known
good
that.
Good Omens.
I yeah. know.
You don't know
Gaiman.
What it is?
I know Neil Gaiman.
Okay.
I don't know yes. the book. I only know the book.
The book is actually
know.
Really good.
The yeah. book is incredible. I have gotten into this fandom as a result of these fanfics.
You
I
love
am now,
this fandom.
I haven't read much of this fandom, though. I'm a big fan of the book, and I love the show, but I haven't read a lot of fanfiction. But this turned me. And I read a quote from Neil Gaiman where he was, or Terry Pratchett, where he was talking about Good Omens. And he was like, yeah, Neil came up to me one day and was like, your fans always look so cheerful and mine always look like they're about to kill themselves. What if we got them to hang out? And that was like
I love that.
The beginning of writing Good Omens.
What a fun quote.
Yeah, I love it. So
what a fun quote.
I love that quote. That's a fun quote.
Come hang out with my murder fans.
Yeah. So I'm gathering, murder Julie, fan. That you know nothing about any of this.
Yeah, not really.
Okay.
I'm a fresh babe.
So we'll need a whole synopsis. Do you quickly. Know enough that we you feel like you can...
We could do a quick one. It just,
I pick up quick.
Yeah, basically, there's an angel and a demon.
Yep. Aziraphale is the angel, played by Michael Sheen in the show.
And okay. Crawley.
Crawley is played by David Tennant in the show.
And
okay. Google those
actors. They're like BFFs in real life, so they have a lot of good chemistry. Also, like, if you haven't watched Staged is one of my favorite shows. It's so good. I have not watched season two of Good Omens, but...
Season two of Good Omens is great.
I've heard... Well, because also there's only one book, right?
Yeah, so the first season is
the first book.
Is a very pretty faithful retelling of the mm-hmm. entire first book. And then the second season is basically...
It goes past that.
Yeah, and okay. Neil Gaiman wrote the second season.
Oh, okay. That's good to know.
Yes, and so... And apparently, I've heard rumors through the Tumblrverse that there was supposed to be a book sequel that they were working on, but it was unfinished.
Oh, and he passed away.
Terry Pratchett passed away. And so Neil Gaiman took a lot of that and used it to write the second season. Mm-hmm. And they've just been renewed for a third and final season.
Okay. Well, basically, this angel and demon have been on Earth since the beginning of time. And they start to like Earth. They're like having a good time there. And
they're basically like, and Crowley is, they've known each other since they were both angels. And Crowley fell. But they've known each other literally since the
forever.
Beginning of creation. And they're put in charge of basically, they're like both the emissaries to Earth for their sides. So Crowley is Hell's emissary to Earth. Aziraphale is Heaven's.
So and whenever something big happens,
they're there influencing things, like writing back to the home office about like updates here's what's happening on Earth.
Got it.
And throughout time, they get closer and closer.
And basically in the first season, the end of the world is coming, but they're both like, well, we know we're supposed to do stuff, but we actually really like Earth.
Like
so let's try and stop the end of the world happening, basically. And then they do that. They are best friends. And a lot of people read it as like they're actually in love.
Yeah.
I also know Michael Sheen said he like played it as
they were in love.
In love.
Oh, cool.
Like he played it like that. And I was like, I like that.
Because the heart of the story really is these two like realizing that they like each other even though they're on opposite sides and then deciding that they're going to work together to save the world, and then through that their friendship develops, and so their ship name is actually called Ineffable Husbands. And they've got a huge fandom that has basically built up around this pairing. And also because the actors and Neil Gaiman, everyone has gone like,
right,
yeah, they love each other. At the very least, they love each other as two beings who can understand each other in the uniqueness of their experience, at the very least, but also probably they want to bang. And so it's kind of come from, like,
the show's not that old, is it?
No, the show's not that old. The book is older. It was published in, I think, 1990.
But were they already fanficing it like that?
A little bit. Yeah, but the like show that. Obviously yeah. just completely blew
David
it up.
Tennant really brings a lot to David the sexual
Tennant.
Tension.
And honestly, Michael Sheen as well.
Yeah.
Who He's I've great. Always had a He's soft great. Spot for Michael Sheen, too.
Yeah.
Back from the in the what was that
Underworld?
Yes,
my mother Donna Brugin. Hi Donna, loves Underworld.
Is obsessed with Underworld. But also, we don't really need to know any of that because it's an AU.
I'll just cut that all out.
Just cut all that out. No, but it's important to
just
establish.
Bleep it. Keep it in, but bleep it.
It's very much about like. So, but it is important to know that Aziraphale, who's played by Michael Sheen, is the angel. So he's very, very, but he's also, his character loves earthly things. So he owns a bookshop, but he never lets anyone buy any books because he doesn't want to part with them, but he needs like a cover story. So he has a bookshop.
To be there,
he loves music. He loves food, but he's an angel. So he's very kind of prissy and goody two shoes and like, oh, well, I guess, da da da. And then David Tennant plays Crowley, who is a demon, who's just very prickly, very impatient, very stubborn, but puts up with Aziraphale and like jabs at him, but would do anything for him. And Aziraphale is like, ugh, you're so annoying because you're a demon and you're pushy, but also would do anything for him. So it's like very sunshine grumpy as a trope,
golden
which
retriever.
Is a trope.
I was gonna say golden retriever black cat is the way we've always
yeah.
done it, but yeah,
same thing.
So that energy, trope is like, that's the energy of this pairing that you need to know, basically.
Cool.
Okay, getting into the story. Actually, any questions about anything I just said?
No, before I'm excited.
Okay. So good to know. Again, those, it's a true AU. So AKA, we will have the names, we'll have the characters, but they are humans. They are not angels and devils. And in this case, they are actors. Trigger warning for internalized homophobia, fear of being outed and accidental outing, and then just straight up homophobia, because that's probably going to come up anyway in all of our stories since we're talking about coming out. Chapter one, from Crowley's POV, picture David Tennant with red hair. It's very hot. He is broke, out of work actor, can't pay any bills, has a migraine coming on, is having a very bad day.
Relatable.
There.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And he's thinking like wistfully about 10 years ago when he did have a little bit of success, but he basically fucked it up by calling out a sexual predator in the industry and was blacklisted.
Ooh.
Whistleblowers always fucking lose it.
This is Brendan Fraser. Go on.
Yes. So he did have some success like back in the day with some action movies. But basically after he called out this producer, who was later arrested like 5 years after he did this, but it still tanked his career, tanked Crowley's career. And he's basically done soap operas ever since. And like occasionally, but does not have a very long CV.
Rose McGowan.
Yes. He went on the Rose McGowan journey. He gets an email that just says script. From his agent, who he hasn't talked to in like a month, and is like, oh, my agent still remembers me and they've sent me a script. And he's being asked for specifically for a, it is a like Bridgerton-esque,
oh, wow,
period romance drama, mm-hmm, called South Downs. And he is being asked to be the opposite, the male lead to the other male lead and romance, mm-hmm, main romance of the show. And, he finds out that Aziraphale is going to be his co-star, and he Googles him and he's like, oh, this dude has been in a million period dramas. The quote was, it looks like this man has never met a cravat he didn't like.
Love it.
I think I'm still confused. So Aziraphale, mm-hmm, is not.
This is Shane. Just their names.
But it is.
They're not angels and demons. They are just actors.
They are human beings. But I'm picturing David Tennant.
Yes.
And
yeah.
Okay.
Picture them, but they're called
David Tennant. Is their names, yes, and their energies.
Yes.
Yes.
We got a lot of the same energy.
Yeah.
But they're
it
not.
It is hard to kind of wrap
David
your head
Tennant,
around.
Right.
Sometimes.
Like it's not David Tennant.
It's not Michael Sheen.
But it's also
it's not the character of Crowley.
It's not Crowley.
It's the character Crowley. Like the inner character, like who he is.
But
as an actor. Yes.
As a human actor.
Cool.
And same thing with Aziraphale.
See, I think that's what really got me. I'm like, if you're an actor, you're an actor, baby.
I had a lot of issues with AUs. I think in our first season, because I just kept going, okay, wait, so it's not a Jedi.
No.
It's like the square is a rhombus kind of thing. Yeah. Like, it's like every actor, every character is an actor, but not every actor is a character.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But so picture David Tennant, but this is Crowley, who is a character.
So he's still got his personality, because we don't know David Tennant as a real person, but we do know this character, and we can build a full character around him. Got it.
Precisely.
Cool. Here with it.
Yep.
Thank you.
And same deal with Aziraphale.
So I did have a question.
Yeah. There you go.
It came out soon.
No, it gets a little confusing.
Okay, but now I think I got it now.
Yeah. So Crowley is like, oh, okay, I'm going to be opposite this actor who has a long ass CV, who has done a million period dramas, and is a little nervous, but is like, okay, I'm going to read this script. And then we switch to Aziraphale's POV, and he's talking to his PA, and he has just found out that Crowley is going to be opposite him. And he goes, isn't that the guy that like puked on Olivia Colman's shoes at the BAFTAs a couple of years back? And there were like rumors of sexual misconduct or something. And his PA goes, I have it on good authority that those were spread after he exposed some other fuckhead. And he did puke on Olivia Colman's shoes, but I don't think he's a drunk or anything.
Like, and they were ugly shoes.
They were ugly shoes anyway. And Aziraphale Googles Crowley and was like, okay, so he was in something called Agent Cobra like 20 years ago, and then two comedies and a few soap operas. But I guess if the director/writer Adam is insisting that he be cast, I'll give it a shot. But he's very nervous.
Good for Adam. Thank God. Yeah, bring
Adam's
him back.
Really trying.
You know?
And so then Crowley realizes that the script is really good. And he reads it and goes, oh, shit. Okay, this might actually be a job that I get paid for and enjoy doing. And so he's really excited about that and accepts and makes the mistake, though, of going on Twitter to look up his co-star. And he sees that Aziraphale has a huge following, especially like LGBTQ kids, because he's openly out gay and a big advocate. Okay. At like Pride, that sort of thing. And he Googles himself. He looks himself up on Twitter, and all there are videos of him puking on Olivia Colman's shoes. This fic, and one of the reasons I picked it, is it does something that I love in fics, where the author has mocked up fake tweets like other like articles and things. So like, here's some of the tweets that Crowley looks at. And it's like, Anthony Flatass Crowley is supposed to be the love interest for our Aziraphale. Unpopular opinion. Anthony Crowley is super hot. Look at his legs. I thought Anthony Crowley died already. And so like, these are the tweets that we're getting.
That's fun. I love an interactive book like that. You feel like you're like cheating. You're like, ooh, it's pictures.
It just adds, it just adds another element. And I always really respect it when a fanfic author is
puts in the time.
Yeah, like it takes a lot of time to come up with the tweets and then come up with usernames the same usernames.
And not just type them in your normal font.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and the same users start to show up throughout the fic.
Oh, okay.
So these tweets will like show the journey of the fans and the fandom. Of the show South Downs with the actors Aziraphale and Crowley.
So listen closely, all you trolls. Mm-hmm. We're watching you and we're watching your progress.
Yes, exactly. So the next day, the day of the table read, Crowley wakes up, has a massive migraine, and is like, fuck, I'm not going to be my best. And comes in, like stumbles in to the table read with like sunglasses on. And Aziraphale comes over to shake his hand. And he's like, clearly, Crowley's out of it. And Aziraphale immediately gets upset and assumes that Crowley is hungover, because he's got a reputation that there's rumors that he's like a drunk because he puked on Livy Coleman's shoes. And Crowley goes, excuse me, I have a migraine and I'm just trying to exist. And like, I really don't appreciate you coming at me like this. And Aziraphale,
good for him for standing up.
Yeah, he's like sassy. He's a demon.
No, it's your first fucking day though, bro.
Yeah,
I hate like a missed communication thing of like, oh, but wait, like no, just fucking say what's wrong.
Yes, yeah, I don't mind the honesty, but I do feel like there is a kindness in communicating. You don't have to be nice. Fair. You could be kind.
He came at him.
That's not what Crowley is doing, because also Crowley is canonically prickly.
Yeah.
A prickly man. And Aziraphale like quickly realizes what happened and apologizes and says, I just kind of thought because of all, you know, the rumors. Mm. And Crowley goes, it was food poisoning, and Olivia laughed it off, but they never show that video. Aww. I still can't live it down, and I still can't smell shrimp without wanting to puke. Oh,
that's so sad. I love shrimp.
I know. And Aziraphale is immediately like apologetic, tells Crowley to sit down, and Crowley kind of sees him go and talk to somebody, and all of a sudden like the lights have lowered a little bit. And like Aziraphale comes back over with like a water bottle and an ibuprofen and is very sweet and very apologetic.
That's really sweet.
It's very sweet. And so they get on with the tale read, and Crowley realizes, which I don't know if you guys have ever had this feeling, but it's a very fun one to have. Like in the middle of the table read, Crowley goes, oh, I'm in a room of talented, capable people.
Yeah, it's the worst.
It's a lot.
Yes. You get, it's you go, terrifying. I have never walked before. Like, my feet don't work.
Why am I here?
Yeah. Like, I'm like, am I blinking too much? I'm like, in my fucking head.
And sometimes it ends up being okay. And you're like, actually, this was fun. And sometimes it's like, I want to go home and I want to sit in the shower and sob for 5 minutes.
9 times out of 10, it's totally fine.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And like, you get out and you're like, wow, I belonged there. And they probably thought the same thing about me.
Yeah.
But you still do the sobbing in the shower because you're like,
you have a moment or several moments of like, what am I doing?
Once in a blue moon, that was me at like riff practice. I'd be like, motherfucker, why am I here? Everyone can rhyme.
Oh, when I first did MCL, I had never sang a song in public in my life.
I was
overwhelmed by like the talent. And I was like, oh no. And they were all very showy about it too. Yeah. So it was not like quiet.
Yeah. Yeah. I've had that feeling a couple of times with both the immediate panic, but also like going home and initially thinking you did well and then starting to analyze every single thing you ever had. And Crowley kind of has that in the moment where he second guesses himself, but he goes, it's been so long since I've had a job that I could actually see being good and being something I'm proud of. So I'm just going to try to lean into it.
Yeah. I mean, when you're in the room, you belong in the room.
You're there for a reason.
That's the thing. You're there for a reason. And if you are sticking out like a sore thumb, then we can all learn something from that. You know what I mean? Like, fuck that.
Yeah. Yeah. And so after the table read, Aziraphale goes up to Crowley and says, hey, can I buy you dinner? Like, we should get to know each other. And also, I feel badly for how I, you know, started us off on the wrong foot. And Crowley initially is like, oh, you want to have dinner with, okay, sure, I guess. And they agree to meet later that night. And Aziraphale is talking to his PA, Anthonea, and she goes, is it just me, or does that man seem very gay? And Aziraphale says, we don't speculate about people's sexualities. And she goes, so is that a yes then? And he goes, just make a dinner reservation. We're not doing this.
The lack of answer tells me everything I need to know.
Yeah, and like Crowley is not, just to clear it up, Aziraphale is out, is like a proud gay guy. Crowley is not. Crowley has been seen out with women kind of at the beginning of his career, but he's kind of gone dark publicly for the last 10 years anyway. So, So they go out to dinner and Crowley's like, honestly, I think it's really important to me that we get along because I want the cast to like me. And I know that I'm up against a lot of rumors and things that I feel I need to prove myself against. And Aziraphale is like, you're here for a reason, like you were saying. And like my PA told me that you were basically framed when you tried to out this, I think it's Morningstar, if I'm remembering correctly, like you tried to like expose this dude. And so like, don't worry about me judging you for those things. Like, that is, after our interaction today, you seem talented, you seem cool, let's just be friends. And that's kind of what they decide to do at this dinner.
Nice.
Yeah.
I love friends.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
And Aziraphale basically reveals like this role is really important to him because he says there are not a lot of like gay characters that just get to be gay and in love, and I think it's time for a Bridgerton style gay period drama. And so he's like, when I heard about this project, I wanted to be involved no matter how they'd have me, so I'm a producer on it and I'm, you know, obviously starring in it, and I just think that it's really important for representation. And Crowley's like, is it okay that I'm not gay and I'm playing opposite you? Like, are you okay with that? And Aziraphale is shocked. But Crowley goes, I as long as you have all of your teeth, I'll be fine kissing you. And that makes Aziraphale laugh. And then they just have a normal, lovely dinner. Aziraphale gets Crowley's phone number at the end of the dinner because he wants to send him like a YouTube video. It's all good. So they start filming. They're basically in these flats in the area where they need to start filming. Crowley gets on Twitter at Aziraphale's advice and starts just basically like tweeting small updates here and there to start buzz for the show. Because if Aziraphale's like, I have a huge fan base, they're already talking about it, like having the co-star tweeting will also help. And so the fans are starting to be like, oh, who's this Crowley guy? Mm-hmm. And then Crowley finds a cat on the street and does a tweet going, if anybody isn't like, can put this little guy up, it's, you know, he deserves a nice home. And the fans go wild and are like, this guy is awesome. We love him. He's a lover of animals. And there's all these tweets that the author made up of people being like, he cares about animals and he has long legs. What are we going to do with ourselves?
He does have long legs.
He does. And so the Crowley thirst is just ramping on up. And we get a little more backstory about Crowley. He goes to visit Tracy and Shadwell. So Tracy and Shadwell are like basically his de facto parents. Like, it was his dad's best friend was this guy, and then Tracy is his partner. And Shadwell is like this grumpy, homophobic Scotsman who just like is saying, just, you know, saying slurs, and that's just part of his vocabulary and that's part of his old-fashioned life. And Crowley is around that 24/7. when he goes to visit his family. And so we get some backstory and some understanding of that. And we kind of hear that, we hear his inner monologue about how he is nervous about his family judging him for playing a gay character.
Yeah.
Yeah. And for playing opposite someone who is so outspoken about LGBT rights.
Yeah. You're not just gay, you were the gay activist.
Exactly.
Except that was a Scottish
The
accent.
Scottish version. Yeah.
You're not just gay.
You're not just gay.
Gay activist.
I want to apologize to all of our Scottish listeners for that terrible Scottish accent.
Many, many Scottish listeners.
You're not gay. You're an activist.
So they start hanging out more and more.
That was good.
We're just gonna breeze past fair. Emily's Scott's accent.
I don't like that.
But the so all of Crowley and Aziraphale's just starting to like hang out and get to know each other comes to a head for Crowley when they film their first physical scene, which is in the long period drama tradition, a hand touch. And
yes,
so
Mr. Darcy Hand.
And so Crowley's character's daughter is marrying Aziraphale's character's son. And in the scene, their characters are arguing about the terms of the marriage agreement for their children.
Oh, no, I don't like that they're daddies.
They're dads.
That's weird.
They're dads. And Crowley's hand touches Aziraphale's hand in the scene, and as he's supposed to, Aziraphale like gasps and pulls it back, but Crowley also feels heat through his entire body and gets quote unquote an inconvenient hard on.
On TV.
On TV.
The sequel
the camera adds 10 pounds. Am I right?
The sequel to An Inconvenient Truth is the inconvenient hard on.
And so Crowley goes, I'm just not going to think about that. I'm not going to analyze that too hard. It's just because I haven't been touched in a long time. I haven't had sex in like 8 years. It's not because I'm attracted to my co-star. Certainly not.
And maybe. Then,
and then the next chapter, we get our first Southdown RPF fic posted by the fans on Twitter. Do we know what RPF means, Julie?
I was really trying. Anytime I hear an acronym, I'm trying my best before you tell me. Hold on. Real person fiction.
Yes. Oh. Yeah.
We talked about it.
RPF fic?
RPF, yeah. Real person fiction.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, and so RPF in the story is being posted by the fans of these actors about them.
So technically it's an actor fic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wow, Inception.
Yeah. And Crowley is aware that the fandom is happening, and he's not reading the sex fics about him and his co-star, but he is aware that they're happening. And is still trying very hard to rationalize his very intense reaction to the hand. And they are still hanging out.
That's got to be wild, though, to be like in your 30s, I'm assuming.
They're like
point,
in their
40s.
Like
and
50s.
Getting your
40s.
First little hard on from a hand touch. Like,
yes.
God damn it. Maybe I'm just a real good actor.
Yeah. Like your late 40s, you suddenly are like, oh, I haven't felt this in my body.
And from
ever.
A hand touch, you got to feel so weak.
Exactly.
You're like, God damn it. I get so weak in the. We don't have that one either.
We don't have much. We don't have much as far as song rights.
We don't have it.
We don't have it.
I'm just going to keep trying to do a Scottish accent.
So they're deep into filming, and we as the reader get like snippets from various POVs of co-stars kind of noticing and going, are you guys like together? Or are you just, and they're like, oh no, we're just really good friends.
We just giggle
all the time.
We just share the same craft table services at the same time.
There's a scene where two of their co-stars are hanging out in Aziraphale's trailer, and he's like doing a crossword, and Crowley pops by with a bakery box because he's gotten in the habit of every morning stopping by the bakery and picking up something new for him and Aziraphale to share together.
I'll tell you what, that's the fastest way to my heart.
I know, me too. And they like banter and tells Aziraphale, oh, the answer to this is ducks. And Aziraphale's like, no, it's not. And Crowley's like, you just never believe me. Like, you just don't understand how smart I am. And then like breezes out and leaves. And the two co-stars that watch the entire interaction go, you guys were flirting hard. And Aziraphale's like, no, I wasn't. And then he opens the bakery box and it's full of the Chelsea buns that he'd said he wanted to try.
Aww.
So that night, the young ones, quote unquote, on the cast, which is what Aziraphale and Crawley have started calling everyone else because they are the old men in this show.
Honestly, I'm 36 and I call everyone else the young
ones. Yeah, they're the young ones. They all want to go out for a drink and they convince the old farts to come with them. And so they go to a dive. And this is when Aziraphale has his moment because Crowley is like, do you want to play pool? And he goes, oh, sure, I guess. And Crowley takes off his button up. And like, so he just has like a t-shirt underneath.
Yeah.
Hold on. I just got to read it. It says, and Aziraphale's brain stops working. And then Crowley stretched his hands above his head, which did something entirely indecent in the belly region of his shirt, involving a patch of ginger hair and the tiniest little tummy roll in existence. And Aziraphale turned away to look at Pepper instead to say, I believe Crowley and I would like to play the next game, scrubbing his mind of thoughts of body hair and thin biceps as hard as he possibly can.
Wild.
Yep. And so they're just flirting and playing pool and Crowley is sexy.
And Crowley sexy
and like whatever,
it's whatever. And Aziraphale's like, it's whatever, even when he notices that Leah, who works on the production, has asked Crowley out on a date. And Crowley says, oh sure, yeah, we could go have a drink. And the next day they do go have a drink, but then they try to like go home together and Crowley can't perform. He's like, I'm just not into it. I don't really know why.
Yeah,
I
haven't been a masculine hand touch.
Yeah, he's like, I haven't been super into sex for like 10 years. I haven't really.
Since I puked on that bitch's shoes.
Since I puked on Olivia Colman's shoes. I've been super into it. And he can't stop thinking about the hand touch scene the entire time. And Leah's like, it's fine. I'm going to go.
Yeah.
But the plot thickens. The plot just keeps thickening.
Also, what a wild PA to first night try to hook up with the
like. Not a PA. Like, she's the it was like one of the makeup artists.
Okay, she's a little further. I'm like, damn, yeah. That just seems so cloudy to it's like be lot. Hooking up with somebody first night. Like, yeah. Like I would date if I'm interested, but
well,
like,
it's not the first night of filming.
Also, shoot
they're,
my shot.
They're like a couple weeks in.
Right, I'm all about shoot my shot, but I'm like, y'all trying to fuck on the first. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, to me, I'm like, this just that comes off as hookup to me.
Yeah,
and
that's
hetero culture. And like when I'm dating hetero people, I'm like, oh, first date means hookup. And that can be more dangerous when it comes to work people. I don't know. I just think that's ballsy. But I get it for the story.
I'm a big proponent of don't shit where you eat.
Big
fan. Certainly. I would never
do that. I would never shit in a Chili's.
But we do need.
Oh, I wasn't expecting that.
Neither would I.
Neither would
I.
I'm so sorry.
But we do need that as the reader to be like, Crowley is very much not. Interested
right
in
right right no I get it yeah. I think it's necessary too yeah. But I'm also like just thinking from like my realistic person I'm like damn okay.
What's going on
get it
like a week later they're Crowley and Aziraphale are hanging out. They've gotten into a habit where every single night after filming they have dinner and watch a movie together in each other's like flats.
What kind of movies do they say?
One of them is The Matrix.
Oh, okay.
And that's then another one is like oh, God. Escape from New York is
very
one of them.
Sexy.
Oh, very sexy.
Snake? Yes.
But I was going to say The Matrix, trans allegory, Escape from New York. Am I right?
Escape in the Closet.
Yeah, like, hello.
Kurt Russell's hair.
And Aziraphale reminds Crowley that the next day they have to film their first kiss scene.
We should practice.
And Crowley goes, I'm not anxious like I was about the hand touch because I feel really comfortable now with everyone. Aww. So I'll be fine. And cute. The next day they start the scene and it's the usual like easy chemistry of the scene until he kisses Aziraphale and he's then only thinking about the ham sandwich that he had earlier. And he's really worried about it and he can't get out of his own head. And they try the kiss scene again and again and again and it's not working.
Now this is the most relatable scene in the story so far.
Yep. It's just not working. And finally the director calls it and takes Crowley aside and is like, hey, like, do you want to know one of the reasons that I wanted you for this role? And Crowley goes, yes, of course. And he says, in the second Agent Cobra movie, there was a kiss scene and you did a thing where you like it looked like your character was pausing and then decided to kiss the other character. And then it was like a wonderful, really hot kiss. And Crowley goes, I don't know what you're getting at. And the director goes, it sounds like maybe you need to give yourself permission to kiss
Ooh.
Your your co-star.
Go have a sandwich.
Go have a sandwich, come back. And so they fully wrap, and the director's like, we have a full day of filming like in 2 days, and we'll see if we can like shoehorn this, like reshoot this basically later on in the schedule, but we don't have any more time for today. And Crowley is devastated because he's like, this is like the first job I've felt a lot of like positive feelings towards in a long time. And I just fucked it up. Like, I'm such a fuck up. He's in a full shame spiral when Aziraphale texts him and says, I have an idea. I'm coming over. So Crowley opens the door and immediately starts to apologize. And Aziraphale is like,
it's like naked.
Yeah, right? And Aziraphale is like, don't worry about it. It happens to everyone. But I have one. He has a bottle of wine in each hand. And he goes, when I had my first kissing scene, Amy and I got trashed and snogged on her couch until I could have recognized her teeth with my tongue. It wasn't erotic because I am incredibly gay, but it did give us the intimacy we needed to deal with the scene. So that's what I think we should do.
Hell yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. He's like, he's like, I know you're
acting
straight.
Acting is so fucking gray area with that kind of shit. Yeah. How blurry, like, because you're like, we should practice fucking.
Yeah. Well, and he's like, it's not even that. He's like, because Crowley's like, this is, I don't know about that.
We need to get more comfortable with being that.
Yeah.
No, it makes sense.
We just need to get used to physical intimacy with each other. And so Aziraphale starts like randomly doing things during their hang. Like, he blows a raspberry into Crowley's shoulder and like pokes him in the side and just starts trying to, he's like, I'm just gonna try to touch you more to get you used to this.
These are all things I do.
I know, me too. Yeah, this is where the spaghetti dancing comes in, because Aziraphale puts on Mambo Number 5 and then is like, this is a game we used to play in church camp. And they both have a piece of the same piece of dry spaghetti.
Who brings Lubega to church camp?
Aziraphale does, apparently.
He makes his way into church camp. No one brings Lubega. He already there.
Lubega's been there.
Is gone.
Like some kind of eldritch horror. He has always been and will always be at church camp. and so Crowley has a piece of dry spaghetti in his mouth, and then Aziraphale has the other end in his mouth, and the point is that they dance, but then every time the spaghetti breaks, they have to put it in their mouth again. So they're like dancing together.
They're playing this at church camp. This is racy.
So they're dancing together with a fragile ass regular spaghetti noodle.
Yes.
Not even
not cooked, a dry one, a
but not even
one.
A fettuccine alfredo noodle. Nope.
A sketty.
No, but it's at least it's not an angel hair.
Yeah, thank God it's not an angel hair. It would have been doomed.
A couple times it like snaps in half,
right?
And they put the longest end back in their mouths.
That's so hot.
It's so hot.
I want to do an awkward
silly spaghetti dancing.
Dance.
Yes.
We'll do it after we
Hell
finish.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. And Aziraphale basically is like, this was a quote unquote game we played as an excuse to get our mouths closer to each other's mouths.
Yeah, it's like it's the suck and blow credit card game.
Exactly.
Nobody really wants to know what your fucking lung capacity is. I don't give a shit.
I do.
And Crowley goes, Aziraphale says, I learned this at church camp. And Crowley goes, you little Christian slut. Okay, let's do it. So they do the spaghetti game. And then Crowley is like, I need to be drunker. And so he keeps drinking. Aziraphale was also drinking, but like a normal human amount. Crowley is drinking I need to be able to deal with this amount, if that makes sense. And they like play another game, the one where you put someone's name or like a character on your forehead. Yeah. You have to guess. And then finally Crowley just goes, fuck it, and kisses Aziraphale.
Yay.
And it is too much. It is the same thing that happened in the previous scene. Like when they were trying to film it, it's just he's thinking too hard about it. And Aziraphale says, you need to relax and let me kiss you, let me lead you. And it is fantastic. And they start making out hardcore. And Crowley has never felt this much while kissing someone. And Aziraphale goes, see, you're more relaxed. Doesn't this feel better? And Crowley is thinking, it goes, yeah, but in his brain, he doesn't feel that way at all. He feels like he's been smacked in the face and he's breathing hard and he doesn't know what to, like, he's being hit with a lot of feelings. And he's like, is it better for the scene? And Aziraphale says, yes, and then pulls him in for another kiss. And now they're just fully making out. They're just fully making out and grinding on the couch. And then all of a sudden, Crowley's like, oh no, I'm going to puke. and then runs to the bathroom.
No.
And he's like, the puking isn't because of the kissing. The puking is because I drank too much wine. And Aziraphale says, I know, darling. It's okay. And Corley goes, because I would kiss you again anytime. Corley wakes so hungover. Aziraphale is sleeping on the couch. And he's aware that he made out with a man, got another inconvenient erection, and really, really liked it. And basically goes, oh, no, I think maybe I need to examine this for myself, and thinks through his sexual history and is like, yeah, actually, now that I'm thinking about it, I like lost my virginity to a woman, and then when I got famous, like banged people that wanted to bang me because I was famous, but I've never chosen to have sex. I've never been invested in having sex. I just thought that I was like someone with a really low sex drive. But my experience yesterday, I wanted to do all the things. I wanted everything, and I've never felt that before. Oh no, what could this mean? And then we switch to Aziraphale's POV, where he enters his flat after like taking care of Crowley and like does the like groan slide down the wall, and he says out loud, I have a crush on a straight man. Oh no.
Been there.
Yeah, tale as old as time.
And then we switch to Crowley's POV. He's on a Reddit thread titled How Do You Know You Are Gay? And decides, you know what, I need to experiment. He decides to try to masturbate and think about men.
He didn't even use the pornos.
Wow. No, he tries to watch porn and is horrified immediately because it's way too much for him.
Porn is always just so
And you know, he smack in the face. He probably found like the first thing, and it was probably like way too hard.
Way too much. So he's like, you know what? Why don't I just like try to masturbate and just like think about men generally? But of course, he ends up thinking about Aziraphale, and he comes harder and faster than he has in 10 years.
Wow!
And goes, oh no, I need to talk to my co-star. And so he asks Aziraphale to dinner to discuss something. And Aziraphale is nervous as all hell and goes, he's gonna like friend break up with me because we made out and now he feels weird. I know he's gonna break up with me. And Crowley ends up coming over because Aziraphale's like, well, it's my turn to cook. I'll just cook for you and we can hang out and you can tell me what you need to tell me. And Crowley basically goes, so how did you know that you were gay? And I'm trying to get in the head of my character. And I feel like if my character, John, if I knew more about his journey, I would be able to play it a little bit better. And Aziraphale goes, oh, well, I just kind of knew when I hit puberty and I wasn't attracted to women, but I was attracted to men. Like,
simple as that.
Yeah. He's like, it was never a crisis for me.
Sometimes it's easier for people.
He was like, I just kind of have always known. And Crowley's like, that doesn't help me at all. Okay. And Crowley goes, yeah, but like John, my character, he has a wife that he loves and he has a daughter, and like his wife and him have presumably had sex. And so like
to have said daughter.
Yeah. And he's like, so I'm just having trouble getting inside his head. And Aziraphale, I love this part. Aziraphale scoffed, Crowley, please, you can have sex with someone you're not attracted to, as if you've never gone home with someone because they were better than nothing. We've all done it. And Crowley, the question had started out as an excuse, but a light clicked on in Crowley's head. He'd read through Reddit threads and poked through unhelpful articles. Bisexual, gay, asexual, something called demisexual that he still needed to wrap his head around. He'd had trouble understanding how he'd missed the boat for so long. But maybe he wasn't an idiot. Maybe it had simply been easier to do it the way he'd been doing it. Which felt very true to me.
Yeah, that's so real.
I could see
it's
that.
It's the internalized homophobia. I mean, that did a lot for me in like high school and stuff. I was like, it's easier to be asexual than to have to try and
figure it out.
Do the scary thing that people may
reject
or like at worst harm me over you know, whatever. Like,
but I was even thinking reject on every sense of the word, even if you're private about it, even if you're like willing to go explore with women. What if they don't like you and they're you're the one queen person that was not accepted by the queer, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, it's a whole thing.
Yeah, and you're it's like, well, then spiral. I can't go back,
right?
Then I'll have to admit that to myself. So it's just easier to be like, this is why so many people smoke weed.
Yeah.
This is why I should smoke more weed.
So after this light bulb clicks on for him, Crowley just turns to Aziraphale and says, I think I might like men. And Aziraphale drops his spoon and takes a minute and then goes, okay. And Crowley goes, I would really like to discuss it with you because you're gay and I know you.
And because you are a man.
Because you are a man and you are also gay. And Aziraphale is like, is this a new realization? And Curly goes, yeah, the show and our kiss made me kind of realize that I've been trying to do my own research, but I need to be able to talk to somebody who actually knows what things are real because the internet is scary. And Aziraphale's like, okay, so how can I help you? And Curly goes, well, I think it would be really helpful if I could like try some things with a friendly gay person so I can just make sure that I'm not making all this up in my head and that I am actually, you know, really turned on by this the way I think I am. And
Your neighborhood friendly gay
and co-star. And Aziraphale's like, I don't know if this is the best idea. Like, we're co-stars and maybe it was just like the acting feelings coming up for you when we kissed. And Curly goes, Aziraphale, it was the best kiss I can remember. I'm sure of it. I'm sure that it was the best kiss I've ever had. Did you like it? And Aziraphale's like, I did, but I don't know if it's the best idea. But then he like for a second looks at Crowley's mouth and Curly goes, I guess we should check though now that we're sober, right? And then looks at his mouth and then they do make out again and it is once again perfectly lovely and fine and good. Love and they end up making out on the kitchen table for a really long time.
Gay.
And then Aziraphale. Kitchen. And Aziraphale basically puts a stop to it and goes, okay, I need you to leave and go make a list of the things you want to, I need to understand more what you want from me. Like, make a list of the things you're thinking of that you want to quote unquote try out. And then we could talk about it more. And Aziraphale's, we switch to his POV the next day and he's just like, I know this is a bad, messy idea, but I want to do it. I want to keep making out with this man.
I'm like a pig in shit, baby. Give me the mess.
He's like, this is going to be bad, but it's really hot and I think I'm just going to do it.
And it'll be fun.
We've all made those choices before.
Hell yeah.
And yes, Crowley calls him and he's like, it's really hard to make a list of sex acts. I don't know where to start. I don't know what to do. I tried watching porn again and it's terrifying.
You just write regular, comma.
Regular
not
sex.
Not regular.
And Aziraphale's like, you don't even need to write down specific sex acts. Just like start small of like small things you want to do.
Touch my hand.
Yeah. And Curly starts talking aloud and he's not even talking in a sexy way, but he's just like, well, I really like your hands. Like we could try touching in
bed. Something about a man's hands.
Oh yeah. They kind of start like flirting, but then it gets to be a lot. Curly says, I thought kissing was a load of shite, but I didn't realize it until I kissed you, how great it could be. And Aziraphale's stomach gives like a little romance novel swoop and it's very cute. And they basically just start kind of making out every once in a while, and Crowley starts to discover what it's like to want someone, which is new for him. Like he's like, oh, I have desire now. I didn't think that I was a person that had that.
Life doesn't end in your 30s, bitches.
Boo, boo, boo. And we basically reach a point where Crowley, they are both individually obsessed with each other, but they just haven't talked about it to each other.
Men.
Yeah. Well, people in, I know that I'm no angel around this either. And so there's a moment that reminded me of Emily where
what does that mean?
Where Aziraphale's out of town and Crowley goes out with the cast and gets drunk and calls Aziraphale.
Why would that be? Like,
and is like, hi, I just want to tell you that I think you're cute. And Aziraphale finds it very adorable and Crowley's like, I want to like touch you and stuff, but like you're far away and why did you leave? And that was mean of you.
I don't appreciate this.
It feels attacked. Like you though. Tell me I'm wrong.
Have I done that before? Yes. And that's all I'll say.
Will I do it again? Probably.
Yeah.
And right after that, Aziraphale comes home and they start making out and they try to do more. Like Aziraphale gives Crowley a hand job and it's lovely, but then Crowley tries to return and gets super overwhelmed.
I do not dream of labor.
And then so they just keep doing this. It's very cute because Crowley's like, well, at least I can cross gay cuddles off of the list, because they basically just cuddle after he gets overwhelmed. It's very sweet. And then they progress to blowjobs and it's lovely and they're just learning how to touch each other. And then the day to film their sex scene in the show comes and it is scary.
What kind of filthy ass HBO Skinamax is this?
I know.
Well, do they have a intimacy coordinator?
They do. And so they're talking to the intimacy corner and coordinator and blocking and planning their scene. And it's like a very, very Bridgerton, very like most of the clothes are still on.
Yeah.
We're having a
closet somewhere.
It's more the tension build up than the actual act itself.
Exactly.
Kind of thing. Well, yeah. And it's that era and their dad. So like, obviously it's probably a secretive.
It's secretive.
Yes. Yeah. It's not like we've gotten a whole hotel room and we're having a moment. No. Like, it's not. Yeah.
It's like clandestine. And they're basically all they're doing initially for the first day with the intimacy coordinator is just blocking and like figuring out where things will go, but they are both getting incredibly turned on the entire time.
Talk about cock blocking.
Yes. Hey. Like it's very hard for them to like
focus.
And Crowley is about to, at the end of the day, be like, hey, you want to come back to mine and work off some of this tension? And Aziraphale just runs out the door and then texts him later and goes, I was really worried about what I would do in a professional workplace if I stayed around you any longer. And Crowley calls him and says, like, well, you know, I'm really good at dirty talk.
Ooh.
I've never done it with a man before, but I've gotten good reviews. And they have some lovely
Appreciate
phone sex.
That.
They
you
have
get
some
a lot
really
of phone,
good phone
sex for like in your stories.
I love
it to be a trend.
I'm into dirty talk in general. Okay. And phone sex
I
really
love dirty talk.
Yes. And it's like kind of bossy, kind of rude, very fun phone sex. But then they find out the next day that filming the actual sex scene is not at all sexy because they're just grinding against an intimacy pillow for
and
like 4 hours.
People around you and the lights are there. I bet that would be like so uncomfortable.
Yeah. And so they like, they end the dirty talk and be like, oh my God, tomorrow's going to be so sexy. And then we do a hard cut to them like being like, I think I'm chafing in places I never thought I could chafe. Do you want to just eat sushi and hang out tonight and not be sexy at all? Mm-hmm. They're like, yeah. So it's cute. I think it's really cute.
Yeah, that's very good.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And so their relationships keep progressing. And finally, Crowley gets to a point where he's like, okay, I feel like we're in a relationship. I feel like I care about you.
I'm sorry, but if you're going to relax with sushi after work, you're in a relationship.
Maybe you're in a relationship.
Okay.
And Crowley confesses to Ezra while he's like, tells him, you know, yeah, my dad was really homophobic. The only tie I have to family is like my dad's friend who is also very homophobic and would like, when I was a little boy who liked theater and wanted to be an actor and would paint my nails, one time my dad made me scrub the nail polish off of my cuticles and I like my fingers bled.
Oh.
Like I was not raised in a way where this was accepted, so I'm very scared. And Aziraphale's like, you can come out in your own time or not at all. Like, it is up to you. Mm-hmm. I am here for you. This is your journey, whatever you want to do.
Secret lovers. Mm-hmm.
Crowley comes out to his agent and she hooks him up with a publicist who also happens to be Aziraphale's publicist.
Oh.
And is Gabriel, who's played by John Hamm in the show. So just picture John Hamm as their publicist.
I always do.
Every publicist with John Hamm.
And so shortly after that, filming wraps and Crowley is like, hey, I need to talk to you. And because he's noticed Aziraphale has started to pull back at the end of filming. And Aziraphale basically comes in and tries to break up with Crowley.
Uh-oh.
And is like, hey, I've been thinking about
Before
it.
Before the last episode? Awkward.
I know. And goes, you deserve to go out into the world and find out more about who you are as a gay man.
Yeah.
And I don't think that it's fair. Like, I love you and I can't keep doing this knowing you are at the beginning of something.
Yeah, that's hard.
Yeah.
It's a lot of pressure.
It's a lot of pressure. And he's like,
I never understood the virgin thing. Like, why men are like attracted. I'm like, I don't want all that pressure.
It's a lot. And he's like, you should be able to have experiences that aren't just me. And like, maybe this is moving too quickly. And Crowley's like, I wasn't sure what I wanted, but coming to you about it initially wasn't just because I wanted to have sex with you. It's because I liked you as a person.
Cute.
I like you and we should be together. And Aziraphale's like, oh, well, I really like you too. And then they have sex.
Hey, remember when I just broke up with you? I didn't mean it.
I take it back.
So they decide they want to be together and they slowly start the process of Crowley coming out. And so Aziraphale goes with him to meet Tracy and whatever that guy's name is.
Shadow Facts.
Shadley or something.
Shadwell. Finally, after much agonizing, is like, I'm finally ready to come out publicly. Uh-huh. Like, I'm ready to do it. And Aziraphale says, well, you can't do it right now. And Curly goes, what do you mean? And Aziraphale's like, well, our show is about to come out.
Hello. Time it.
Time it properly so you don't overshadow the show.
And that's why you break up with that guy, because he's an actor through and through. Mm-hmm.
And Curly gets really pissed and storms out, and they get in a big fight about it. Yeah. And Curly thinks that they're just in a fight. Aziraphale thinks that they broke up. And so, and so they're separated for like a month before they start publicity for the show.
Well, also, I'm sorry, but if I don't talk to my partner in a month, I'm going to go ahead and assume that's a breakup too.
Yeah.
Like a ghosting.
But I would have reached out to
there's
check
no
in.
Not talking there's, for a month.
They don't talk for a month. Aziraphale thinks they broke up, so doesn't reach out. And Crowley is like, well, Aziraphale will reach out in his own time.
What
when,
a little brat.
Yeah. And so they're just like, so he just gets mad, and they have their first interview on the press tour, and Aziraphale says something that rubs Crowley the wrong way, and he storms out and goes to the green room. And
well, it looks like he just came out.
Well, it's not even about that. He's just like, I need a break. I need a second and leaves. And Aziraphale follows him to the green room and is like, why are you being so rude to this interviewer? And Crowley says, why didn't you call or text? Aziraphale says, because we broke up. And Crowley goes, no, we didn't. We just had a fight.
We were on a break.
And in the middle of yelling at each other, Aziraphale does the thing again and looks at Crowley's mouth, and that's all they need, and it's all over, and they're all making out. And Crowley says, I'm still angry with you, as they jerk each other off in a green room. And just as Crowley comes, the interviewer goes, hey, is everything all right? And knocks on the door. Opens it.
Oh no. Wait, no!
Opens the door.
Well, maybe it wasn't closed all the way, so the knocking.
Yeah. Either way, she sees them, and it is on TMZ almost immediately. So
wait, the camera
was the camera there?
The camera wasn't there, but okay, it's like but an article. It's like a story.
Oh, gotcha.
She leaks it out, and so Crowley is outed against his will.
Fuck
outed
that interviewer. Without, fuck that.
Fuck all of that. And they meet with their mutual publicist, Gabriel, who's very angry at both of them because they kept this a secret from him, which is like what you're not supposed to do
to the publicist.
The publicist. But it's going to be okay. They meet with the publicist. They make a plan. They cry and confess their love to each other and hold each other and are like, we're going to be gay together in public and it'll be fine. And we get a million positive Twitter screenshots and like mock-ups from the author and very happy fangirls who have been writing fan fiction about these two already and
love
are
it.
Like, yes, our ship is real. And the end of the fic is just they go to lunch and hold hands at a cafe and it's fine and no one is yelling, and Crowley's like, no one's yelling at me, I can just be myself together, and it's the most happy, freeing feeling Crowley's had in a long time.
That's lovely.
And he says, I could kiss you right now where everyone can see.
And you can.
Oh, I love that.
Wholesome. We love that.
There we go. I gave you a wholesome one.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I was going to say, because I was nervous. Now, there is something with the coming out I didn't really think about, because I was thinking from the personal perspective of coming out, like figuring it out, rather than the coming out can be really dark and scary. And I was like, damn, all this social stuff. You shouldn't have to feel nervous.
Mm-hmm.
It shouldn't be a fucking TMZ story. It should be like, I mean, maybe the jacking off in the fucker. It should be.
It shouldn't have been.
Story.
It shouldn't
maybe
have happened. Should. But
yeah, maybe he had his dick out in the fucking dressing room is a wild story. Mm-hmm. But like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, to me, it's like, it doesn't matter that it's gay. We can also talk about, you know, having sex on the set. Like, we could be like, okay, you know, relax.
There's some unprofessionalism in this story.
That's fine. That could have been the TMZ break in my utopia.
Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? My utopia. That's my story.
Great job.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Big fan.
Very, very cute. Just
it
was, very cute.
I really liked it.
Yeah.
And it also, and I know, because I always gloss over my telling of the sex scenes, it is filthy.
It sounds like there's a lot.
There is a lot, and it is hot, and Crowley has a dirty mouth, and I love it.
Okay.
But that doesn't have anything to do with my game for the story. My game for the story is, who do you think would win in a fight, David Tennant or Michael Sheen?
Michael Sheen gives me, I could do okay in prison.
David Tennant's larger, like physically
taller. Yes,
but he's skinny.
He's so
stringy,
small.
But
Wiley doesn't mean shit.
But
they're
he has
Wiley.
Five kids, so he wrangles children.
Yeah, I do feel David Tennant would be scrappy.
Yeah, he's scrappy.
Yeah.
But I think Michael Sheen would fight dirty.
Yes, I think he's sturdy. I'm going to go Sheen. I think Sheen is sturdier and would go like hardcore, like street rules.
Yeah.
I'm also picturing David Tennant holding Michael Sheen's head like the kid where like Michael Sheen is swinging his arms wildly trying to hit him.
But David Tennant is just long.
I don't think he's that much shorter though, but in my head he is.
But David Tennant is just so gangly.
Tall, yes.
But that said, Michael Sheen gives me I would survive in prison energy, and David Tennant gives me I couldn't survive near a prison energy.
I couldn't survive
like,
near
he's
a prison.
Like, I think he would turn us on. But he gives me, I still think of him, I really have only seen him in Doctor Who. So yeah. I think of him as that guy.
Yes.
Yeah.
And to me, that guy ain't winning no fights.
Yeah, that's fair.
Doctor Who, the character, won nothing.
I think I would probably go. Yeah, I think I would go Michael Sheen. Yeah, just because I think he would bring that intense Welsh energy to anything.
Yes, 100%.
But also David Tennant, the Scotsmen aren't necessarily chill either when it comes to a fight.
I
think they'd be pretty evenly matched.
I see him more as a pacifist too, for some reason.
Yeah,
David Tennant.
Talk down. He's going to talk you down. Look you directly in the eyes. You're going to look at
those
pretty lips.
Words. He'll use his words.
Yeah. I think there'd be an element of that with Michael Sheen. Yeah, but I agree. There's a ferocity there that I don't think David Tennant has.
I can picture David Tennant breaking a beer bottle on a bar though to like threaten somebody.
I think David Tennant would need a weapon.
Yeah,
but I don't know that Michael Sheen would.
Yeah. That's fair.
Yes. I think that's a great way to put it.
Anyway.
Yeah.
What about your story?
That was a good story, though.
Thank you.
Yeah, great job.
Thank you.
Julie, I got to tell you what happened with me.
Okay.
Initially, we had 2 weeks to read.
Correct.
And I found a book like 3 days before. And I had started it. And then life happened. We rescheduled for another 2 weeks. I said, oh, great. I have time. I was working a lot. So I put it off. I started hardcore reading it like the day before Christmas.
Okay.
I finished it on Christmas Day.
Okay.
It was like, I mean, it's kind of a long book. To find out, no one comes out in that book. it's a series.
You should have sold it anyway.
It's
you
a series. It. You and it. I believe he comes out like later on in the series. But I was so mad.
You're just like getting close to the end like.
Where is it?
We're all watching like a movie together. I'm like partially reading. It ends. I go, wait, what the fuck? And then I look back on Goodreads because I found it via Goodreads, like a coming out stories. But I also realized it said coming out / in the closet stories. So I thought that meant like, well, they were in the closet. They're coming out.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
So I still have all those notes, but I panicked because I was like, I can't come to this coming out episode and not read a coming out story. So I did find a novella. It's like 4.5 in this motorcycle series.
Amazing.
But neither of them are motorcyclists, but it's shorter, but it is a novella and someone does come out in it. So
great.
I just wanted Incredible. To let you know that I read like a 400 plus page book and now I'm going to synopsize a 170 page novella, which
Fine.
Is
either way, you're doing too much work. I would have
for like, you. Yeah. I did it for you.
But honestly, I would have been happy with the boy figuring
the
out his
We do this for you and your journey, though. This
I
is,
appreciate
yeah.
it.
Well, and I also, so I wanted to all say that because I was trying to find specifically a book that wasn't like fully about him coming out. I wanted to be an element of it rather than like that have that be the whole story. Because usually in my experience, a lot of books in which I've read a character coming out, it's like very traumatic or like very dramatic.
Yeah.
And so in that story, it was like he was a cop and he was protecting a guy and da-da-da-da-da and they fall in love, but it's secret, but he doesn't come out of the closet.
Got it.
So this one is dramatic. And it's called cool. It's called Coming Out. And it's by...
Cool. I don't believe in wholesome cop stories anyway. This is better.
I'll tell you about it later over drinks.
Okay.
This is called Coming Out. It's by Lila Rose. It's 175 pages.
Hold on. For all the listeners here, I will record that conversation and post it on my Patreon.
TM. All right. So it is 4.5 in this... I believe it's like a 6-book series. And I read it as a standalone. I have not read
the
others.
What does 4.5 mean?
It's a half. It's half... like
so like
it's a
if
novella,
the series
it's not a full
is
book.
Yeah, if the series is books 1 through 6, this is the book that happens between 4 and 5. It's like
but it's not a full book.
It's like 4 and a half. It's like in between those two.
And it's not about, I'm having wire issues. It's not about any of the main characters. It's about side characters that are in book 4 and book 5 usually.
Cool.
Or something like that.
Okay.
And
it's like an interlude.
It's an interlude. So it says it starts with like 2 years before Zara comes back. So we are to believe that Zara is one of the main characters in one of these other books.
There.
Mm-hmm. She ain't there. She ain't
not
there.
Yet.
So Maddie, this all takes place in Australia, by the way. So picture great. Only Australian people.
Are you going to try to do an Australian?
Midi. No, I've learned. Did you say matey?
Midi.
The main character is named Matt. Everyone calls him Maddie.
Great.
So I will hence refer to him as Matty, not Maddie. Just Matty.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Hence why I want to tell that. Maddie is on the football team. In parentheses, I said soccer. They live in Australia.
Thank you.
Although there is Australian football, so I truly don't know. I truly don't know what it is.
It doesn't matter. I'm going to picture the hotter one in my mind.
Yeah. And he is closeted. His sister is on the run from an abusive ex with her daughter. And so they only get to Zoom her like once in a while. Mm. And they're really close. And so he wishes he could tell Zara, but he can't. She's not there. He can't bother her with all of this because she's on the run. Yeah. So.
She's dealing with her own shit.
She's dealing with a lot of shit. And so he's like, okay, I can't tell her, but I think my parents are going to be fine with it. I want to tell them. I'm going to do it tonight. He's like halfway changed in the locker room as he's thinking this. And he plans on also quitting the team after he tells his parents because he knows that some of his co-workers on the field. Some of his teammates are just
capitalism,
not...
baby.
Yeah.
Take a drink for every time you've said capitalism. You're like foreign.
Don't hang out with me.
Some of his teammates are just a little homophobic. And so, and not in like a, I want to kill someone kind of way. And a like, fuck
just
that
not
guy
fun.
Kind of way.
Yeah. Just not
it's
fun.
Never fun to be.
Not an environment you want to be playing sports.
Correct.
Yeah.
So they're all, you. It you. It you, buddy. The coach calls him over and he says, hey, it's your turn for a massage. The university is implementing this new thing for athletes.
A massage? That was my Australian.
It's your turn for a massage.
Nope.
What the fuck was that?
That was JFK.
It's your turn for a massage.
It was JFK.
That was so scary.
It's your turn for a massage.
Every American will get a massage.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
So the new thing, it's new thing given to athletics by the university. All the like athletes are given like once a week a full body massage.
Like because, a PT type thing.
Yes, like a PT type thing. And he's like, all right, it's my turn. So Maddie walks in to see one of the most beautiful men he's ever seen in his entire life.
Ooh.
Julian is a gorgeous 36-year-old guy and he looks angry. He's just like, can you get on the table? Let's fucking go.
Is the anger part of what's doing it for Maddie?
I don't know.
He's like, he's so hot and he looks pissed.
Yes. And this is what I need.
He's just like angry and he's very defensive. And he's like, Maddie kind of doesn't say anything. He's like, why is he so mad? Is he mad at me? Did I do something? And mm-hmm. Julian's like, oh, do you not want a gay guy to touch you? Like what's, I think they don't. He is described as just a beautiful man so far, so there was nothing to the reader to be like, oh, he's clearly gay, but I'm assuming he looks a little more effeminate, maybe?
Or something
in that nature that makes him look more.
He's got a Tom Selleck mustache.
He has a huge Tom Selleck mustache.
Like, people have made assumptions.
Yes, that he is gay.
Yeah.
And so he gets all mad. He's like, oh, you don't want the gay guy to fucking touch you? And Maddie's like, no, I'm fine. Why... what's going on? He's like, oh, well, and he kind of does this thing where he's like still like, fuck you if you don't like me. And then he kind of also kind of makes passes at him. He's like, oh, you like this big boy? And Maddie's like, okay, are you trying to get fired? Like,
yeah.
what are you doing?
What the fuck? HR, bro.
Yeah.
And Julian's like, oh, yeah, I am. Maddie's like, oh.
Actually, yeah, you get severance that way.
Julian's like, I am, but it's none of your fucking business. And Maddie's like, okay. And so he like has a massage and then he leaves. And so that's their first interaction. Wow. They're like, okay.
Very confusing.
Maddie goes home to where he lives with his parents. He is 19 years old. Aww. He's in university. Aww. And he works part-time as a real estate like agent while he's putting himself through university and on the football team. Still don't know if it's soccer or actual football. Mm. And his parents are really nice. His mom used to be a nurse. His dad was like in the army and they're very loving. And he just sits down at dinner and just goes, his dad's like, hey, how was your day? He goes, I'm gay. Oof. I'm gay.
Hell of a come out story.
Yeah.
And Emily cheered from her couch as she read that. She said, he did it.
He did it.
Oh, that's it.
My homework's done.
And then I closed. It was so much easier than the other book I read. They both kind of are like, oh, okay, cool. That's nice.
Pass the potatoes.
Good for you. And his mom immediately is like, do you have a boyfriend? What do you like?
So, Mom,
are you more of a top or a bottom?
And he goes, she didn't.
Yes, she did. And he goes, Mom, no. No,
yeah, no, ma'am.
Thank you.
Down dog.
And then his dad is like, I can't remember what his mom's name is, like Nancy or something. He goes, Nancy, shut, don't say that to him. Like, it's the whole thing. And so it just turns into this like kind of lovely family moment of like the mom trying to go so hard to be like so supportive. And the dad's like, yeah, I'm happy for you. But like, can you shut up, Nancy?
Rain it
because
back, Nancy.
This is too much. And so it's kind of a really funny moment.
You sounded like Hank Hill when you said, shut up, Nancy.
Shut up, Nancy. you're welcome. And so, and this is a dual POV. So now we go to Julian, who goes home, and he lives in an apartment, and he sees his friend Melissa and / neighbor, and she's like, do you want to go? I was about to do an Australian accent, and I know I shouldn't.
Try it. Just keep trying. I think you should keep trying and see how it progresses over the episode.
Want to go out tonight?
That's pretty good.
And he's
British,
like,
but I liked it.
And Well, and so also, I don't know if there's a lot of like Australian slang or a lot of like gay culture Australian slang.
Yeah.
So some of the things that they say, I'm like, oh, this sounds so cringy. But he's very like, ooh, you want to go get like a nice sausage with me tonight? Like saying like they're going to go hunting for a man.
Got it.
Okay. And so
we don't know if it's Australian or just bad writing.
I will say it might be Australian.
It might be bad.
I don't mean
Australians
to generalize.
Have a turn of phrase that is very unique to them.
So we don't know. But he says a lot of things along that line of like, can't wait to find a man, like a man mate tonight.
Liverpool. We're going Liverpool now.
Do you want me to go back to JFK?
Yes.
I think you're missing
every
JFK
man gets a sausage tonight.
Put JFK in Liverpool is what you should do.
Yeah, could you real quick?
Let me go more Hank Hill. Dang it, everyone's getting a sausage tonight. Oh my God. Anyways, so he's saying like, he's talking like this with her and they're very good friends and it's out in the hallway. And then she kind of like freezes and like looks over his shoulder and he turns around and his parents are standing there.
Oh no.
And I should have done trigger warning. I'll do a trigger warning after this.
Did he already come out to the parents?
No, this is the other guy.
Got it.
This is Julian. He is out. And his parents are like, get inside. And they go into his apartment. And it turns out Julian's dad has gotten him this job at the university, hence why he wants to get fired. Because he doesn't want his father to have any control over him or his money. And they are abusive. They hit him for like acting homosexually outside and they don't want it to reflect poorly on them. And he's very much like, fuck you guys. Like both his mom and his dad are just like awful people. And so they're like, if you don't, and this is awful too. And they're like, he's like, I'm going to quit. And they're like, don't quit because we're going to, it gets dark. They're like, we'll send your 14-year-old cousin to your grandpa's house. And his grandpa did like abuse him as a child. So they're like,
Jesus.
So it's all just like this awful, they're really rich.
So they're like holding his cousin over his head.
Kind of. So he like stays in line pretty
much. Yeah.
Okay. And he knows that his aunt.
Also, this is one character intro in a 170-page book. Jesus Christ.
Yes, sir. And so his aunt did believe him. His aunt knows about like his grandpa and stuff. And he cares a lot about his cousin. It's his uncle who is his dad's brother. He like has control over him. So he's like, you can't do anything. And so he kind of like hits him and then leaves. Ugh. And it's just awful. And Melissa comes in and she's like, I waited because I know what they do. And I wanted to make sure you're okay.
Aww.
And she basically like, helps him out. Like, he basically just has a black eye. It's nothing, like, terrible, but it's still bad.
It's nothing terrible. He just got punched in the face by his family.
Yeah.
Nothing too cray. Just, like, a whole, like,
they put some eye punch over it.
Just your eyeballs. Nothing important. Mm-hmm. Like the most fragile thing on your fucking face.
Yeah.
So a week has gone by, and Maddie hasn't seen Julian. He hasn't quit the team yet. He's still hiding because he feels like a coward.
Aww.
And he still wants to play football, but he doesn't really care about any of these guys. But he just doesn't want to, like, he's just worried. He's just worried and he's scared. And I get that. It's been a week, so it's now time again for a rub down. He goes in and he sees Julian who is a lot more subdued, and he has a shiner on his eye, and he is like, hey, what, who did this to you? And he starts feeling this like rage inside of him of like, who would touch this man? Who would do this?
Yeah.
And then he's like, why do I feel this way? Interesting. And Julian's like, don't worry about it. Just sit down. Da, 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 da. So Manny lays in the bed, and we learn as Julian is touching him, he's getting hard, and we learn he's a virgin in the sense of with a man. I think he has been with a woman, but that's irrelevant. And Maddie asks Julian a bunch of questions as he's getting a massage, and Julian kind of dodges them, but and it kind of goes vice versa. So he's like, why wouldn't you tell me who did this to you? And he's like, well, why don't you tell me what you like to do on a Wednesday? And like, you know, it just goes back and forth. Got it. So, and they're kind of doing this thing.
Competing to not communicate better than the other man.
Yep.
And it's kind of flirty, but it's kind of like they still don't really trust each other.
Defensive.
But clearly both of them are like kind of attracted to each other, but neither are going to say.
It's testing the waters.
They're testing the homophobic
waters.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So afterwards, a bunch of the guys are loitering out in the parking lot.
It's pronounced littering.
They're loitering. You bitch. They're loitering in the parking lot.
They're loitering.
And as they're talking, they see Julian walk out, and a few of the like bad guys are like, "Hey, look at that like fag." And one of the guys,
Australia, it's different there.
Is it?
No,
They're, they're talking about a cigarette.
Yeah.
No, it's not. It's still a slur, and
it's like,
and it sucks.
It's fine.
Yeah.
And one of the guys whose last name is Lyons, we never hear his first name, is like, "Hey, don't be fucking dicks. Like, shut the fuck
Hell
up."
Yeah,
and he
Lyons,
walks away.
A fucking ally, bro. Mm-hmm.
And Maddie sees that, and he just like feels bad because he wishes he could stand up to them like Lyons did.
Yeah, don't be
and
a little.
He's like oh still God, more scared.
You are in rare form, Julie.
Are you the problem? I love it though. And so he's just kind of like dealing with all this like mental anguish inside.
He's having a lot of feelings.
Yeah.
So the next night, Julian and Melissa go out clubbing. Fun. And they're on the search for some man meat.
For some sausage.
For some sausage in a roll.
Again, Liverpool.
So British.
We're just going
you've
right
been
to Bridgerton.
Liverpool.
I think of the Beatles and I think of Australia. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Ringo does have Australia face.
He has
What?
I don't know what that means.
The views of Julie America do not reflect from Surgeville.
We gotta call Bryce and be like, hey, you know what Australia faces?
Hey, Bryce, can you just speak to us for 20 minutes so we can get your accent? So they go out, they see some friends, they're hanging out, and all these, and Julian is like, oh, all these guys like you girls, like, go dance with them, I'll watch your stuff, blah, blah. And another guy is kind of eyeing him, and so he comes up. And they're kind of like talking and they're flirting. And Julian can tell that this guy is just like kind of nervous. But he's like, do you want to kiss? And he's like, I do. And he's like, do you want to hold my hand? He's like, I kind of do. And then Melissa goes, oh, there's that guy that's been staring at you is coming over here. And Julian's like, what? And all of a sudden, Maddie comes out of nowhere.
Maddie.
And he's like.
He's been lurking in the corner.
He's like, hey, can you not? And Julian's like, excuse me? He goes, this guy's married. And Julian looks down and there's just like a big old wedding ring on his finger. And he goes, I just didn't think you wanted to be a homewrecker. And like walks away,
damn,
basically.
Damn, Maddie.
And Julian's like, he's right. I'm sorry. I don't do that. Sorry. Thank you.
Wow.
And he like walks away. And then Melissa's like, what the fuck is that? That guy has been looking at you this whole night like he wants to fuck you.
Why has he been watching you? And waiting for you to fuck up.
And Julian's like, he has? And Melissa's like, yeah, that guy would have like torn your clothes off if he could have, or something like that.
Interesting.
So Julian's like, well, I can't wait till Thursday. So Thursday rolls around and Maddie is very nervous. He has not seen Julian. And he's just like, okay, this is going to be, it's going to be fine. Like, whatever, like, no big deal. And he's the last one. He's like, maybe if I'm, like, slow enough, like, time will run out and, like, I won't have to get a massage or something. And then the coach comes in and he's like, listen, I got to go early. Can you lock up? And he, like, gives Maddie the keys and he's like, fuck.
Sexy.
So he has, like, all the time now. And he goes and he gets on the massage table. And Julian's, like, immediately, like, did you sleep with that girl? Oh. Fuck, I forgot to say. So when Maddie was like, thought you didn't want to be a homewrecker and like turns around, there was a girl with him. And it turns out, like, from his inner monologue, it's just a friend and like whatever.
That he's out with. Yeah.
That's just his Melissa.
Yes,
yeah.
It's his Melissa. And so he's like,
you know how every queer man has
a Melissa.
Has a Melissa.
Girlfriend.
Yeah.
That's my Melissa. So Julian's like, did you sleep with that girl? Maddie's like, no. And then Julian, as he's like rubbing like his back, leans down and like kisses Maddie's neck.
Ooh.
And okay. Maddie is
massages
just...
Massages are already so inherently sensual, so this writer really just...
They tapped into something. Yeah.
And Maddie is, like, super hard against this table, and but he's, like, tense, and he's like, fuck, I shouldn't do this. Like, I should go. But he gets up, and he sees... Because he's just in a towel, and Julian is, like, in his, I don't know, like, what do masseuses wear? Sweats?
I was picturing scrubs.
I was kind of picturing scrubs too.
So he's wearing his scrubs,
especially when it's like PT type. If he's a physical trainer type, I'm sure he is in like a scrubs type uniform,
something like that.
Like a sweatpant type.
So he sees that through his loose pants, that Julian is also hard. And Julian leans down and starts giving Maddie a hand job, and then he blows him. And I call this number one. I've seen this porno before. Oh,
get out.
What?
Go home. Get out.
I've seen this porno before. No. They're like, that was nice. And then Maddie's like, wait, no, it wasn't. I have to go. And he like freaks out and leaves.
Oh, okay.
Because he's just so, he hasn't done this before. He doesn't know what to do.
He's got a lot of feelings.
Yeah. The next week, Maddie skips practice. He's like, I'm just going to go. I'm going to get work done. And I'm not going to see Julian. And now I don't have to talk about it. And I still like him. And I think about his face all the time. But, like, whatever. And so he stays out because he's like, I'll work at the library. And then I'll just tell my parents that I went to practice. And then I'm home for dinner. And he gets home at the normal time. And Julian is at his house. And he's like, listen, I didn't realize you lived with your parents. I was just going to come and be like, I want to talk to you about this. But they were here.
Oh.
And so he came home and Nancy's like, so you're his boyfriend. What? And she's
like, no, Nancy.
Yep. And so.
I kind of love that, though. I love the idea of like a sweet, supportive parent.
Yeah.
Meddling mother. Like, yes. It's just like she doesn't know, but she's actually kind of wingmanning.
She's here to help.
Like, I guess I am the boyfriend.
And so his dad like sees Maddie kind of being like, I don't know what to do. So he's like, Nancy, we're going out to a movie. And Nancy's like, I made dinner. And he's like, damn it, woman, come on.
I had already wanted to comment on this when you first talked about dad commenting on Nancy. I love a dad that pays attention in these because the trope is typically that they're tapped the fuck out.
Yeah.
And either they're angry about it or just tapped out. And I kind of love that he like notices he's mom so, is too much. And he's like, you know what?
Let's Nancy, we got to pull it back.
He's like a perfect dad.
I got to help.
Yeah, that's sweet.
And it's so like,
we love Nancy, but she's a lot.
She's doing a lot. Yeah.
we don't need to know all the sex details of our son's life.
Yeah.
And so they are now alone in his parents' house. And Julian's like, I was talking to them and they mentioned that you're gay, but you haven't, I don't know, I didn't know that, you didn't say anything, so like what's, are you, and it's okay if you are, and I, you know, if you want to talk about it, like I'm here.
Mm-hmm.
And there are, and he kind of has this whole like, not speech, but he's like, there's always going to be people who hate gay people, but like fuck them, and we're all kind of, and you know, people who identify like this want to help you and want to be there for you, and it's like this lovely like kind of little speech and
support speech.
Mm-hmm. And then he's like, but you know, if that's not something you're ready for, like don't worry about it, and you know, I'm just gonna go, I got a hot date, so I'm just gonna head out. And Maddie immediately is like, the fuck, and he, you know, Julian turns to leave, he like grabs his shoulder and is like, who the fuck are you going on a date with? And then he
jealous.
I'm not gay, but I'm clingy as fuck.
Yeah.
And Maddie immediately like kisses him, and then they start making out hard. And then Maddie backs off being like, sorry, it's kind of weird because this is my parents' house. And so I just, you know.
Yeah, can't get hard in your childhood bedroom it's the tough. Same as you used to.
Not the same, not the same, but it's possible. And so, and Julian's like, also I was joking about the date. I was going to go hang out with my friend Melissa. And he's like, oh,
okay.
Yeah, okay.
And so Julian's like, well, no worries. I understand that this is your parents' house.
No worries. It's so Australian.
Okay. So they exchange numbers and they promise to go out soon because he's like, I would really like to maybe talk about this and maybe like explore some stuff and whatever.
Yay.
Julian's like, yeah, cool. And remember, Maddie is 19. Julian is 36.
Whoa. Ooh, I didn't know that. I don't like that.
I don't either. The next night, Julian invites Maddie over for dinner and assures him that there is no pressure and that he can ask him whatever he wants. If he wants to try anything, of course, he's there for him, but let's just hang out.
Okay.
And so they get to talking. Julian has always wanted to be a masseuse, and Maddie is studying business. He works in real estate, yada, yada. And it's like a nice date. And as they're cleaning up, Maddie kind of makes a pass at Julian. He like, you know, as Julian's like washing the dishes, he like kind of puts his hands on his butt and he's like, look at these buns or something like that. And things develop and they go into the bedroom And I call this one number two, the first time automatically rocks, question mark, because in most books, I guess it is. But it is. But Julian, they do all the stuff that they've already done, like hand jobs, blow jobs, all that stuff. And then Julian's like, I want you to fuck me. So Maddie has not bottomed, but he is topping Julian. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yes. So it's nothing he hasn't done before, but it's with a different person and in a different hole.
Got it.
So, but that's important for later.
Okay.
Hence why I went into weird detail about it. So, okay. Okay. Also, Julian keeps calling him Poppet. It's like his like hun or babe. Yeah. It's like,
oh, hello, Poppet.
Hello, Poppet. I keep thinking of the Pirates of the Caribbean.
Hello, like, Poppet.
And Maddie at one point is like, I kind of like that he calls me Poppet. And I was like, I do not like it. And so a week and a half passes, and they're basically seeing each other every night. Julian comes to dinner with his parents.
But it's not anything serious.
They're like, we're in. There's like a whole moment where Julian's like, you can go explore if you want to, but like, I really like you.
Yeah, I'm exclusive.
Yes, and well, I really like you, and if you want to stay with me, I would love that. And Maddie's like, you're it for me. And it's like, oh, okay, they're both like in.
Damn fast.
So one night they go out and they get into a fight when Julian, who is a natural flirt, kind of makes Maddie jealous while at a bar, but not like on purpose. It's just like he's just a naturally flirty guy.
Yeah.
And so that they kind of get into a fight, and he storms out of his apartment. And Melissa, who was outside the apartment, hears the fight. These must be really thin walls. And pulls Maddie into her apartment as he's leaving. And she's like, hold up. You got to learn some shit about Julian. And she kind of like gives him his background, being like, this is where he comes from. These are his parents.
Also, he's been on the planet twice as long as you.
Yeah.
Literally.
That's the thing that's kind of baffling me is that this is the older person and their friend is needing to be the one to communicate their situation to Maddie.
Well, and he tries to like explain it to Maddie being like, I just want to be who I am.
Right.
But he's not going into detail, but he's trying to say like that that's enough. But I think so I understand. And I think like maybe they're drunk and in the heat of the moment, nothing is coming out the way it should, but I agree with you
sometimes
on that.
Sometimes you need details.
Yes.
Especially for this, planning on dating.
There needs to be details.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong, that's not like unheard of that a 36-year-old man doesn't communicate properly. I'm not saying it's not in the realm of our belief. Yes. I just hate it.
Yeah.
Oh, correct. Yeah. And so, and she tells him about like his parents and how they hurt him and how, you know, because of all that, he wants to be proud of who he is. Okay. Da, 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 da. And the
friend's just over her out and all his fucking dirty laundry.
And the big thing is that like, he's the most loyal. Like that's what she like hammers home. And Maddie's like, okay. And so he ends up going back to the apartment and he knocks and he's like, I'm so sorry. And Julian's like, I was just coming to get you. I wanted to explain stuff. So It helped open a door for communication.
Great.
The next Thursday, Lyons, the cool guy, kind of comes up to Maddie and says something. And Maddie's like, what? And it's like this confirming suspicion of like, hey, I think, are you gay? Because it seems like you are. I don't remember what he said. But he's like, and that's okay with me, and I'm happy.
Yeah, but if it's really okay with you, don't bring it up.
It was like something.
It was like the way he like reacted. It was very obvious, and he's like, I support you. Yeah. I know some people on this team don't, so I just want you to be careful. Like that's what he was saying.
It was from like a more like kind of trying to get ahead of it.
Yeah,
preservation.
But felt he was like, okay, like I'm glad that this isn't gonna blow everything.
Also, we gotta remember it's Australia.
Yeah, we don't know what things are like
going on. It ain't Chicago.
I also didn't write down the date, so I don't know when this takes place. Sorry, guys. And so Maddie goes in for his massage, and he gets the keys again from the coach because the coach is like, I got a hot date. Gotta go. And so he goes in, and he's like, Julian, we're alone. And he's like, oh, my God, what? And he's like, I want to have sex with you because this is, like, the place where it all started. So, like,
feels risky, but okay.
And I call this one number three. Thank God they already have massage oil, in which Maddie bottoms, and it brings them closer than ever. So, they're having a great time. So, Julian, in the next chapter.
Congrats, boys, but who's sanitizing the massage table?
It's somebody better.
Yeah, I don't know if it's his, if he's like bringing it with him.
Right. Like, this is the community.
I'm hoping they have some Windex.
Anyway.
So, Julian talked. We find out he talked to his aunt, who was on like a big vacation, probably in like the middle of Australia, where like she couldn't be reached.
Got it.
Okay, so Julian talked to his aunt and she believes him. She she believes him and she immediately left, like, her husband, who she wasn't even crazy about. But, like, you know, the husband was the dad's brother.
So she left the blackmailer guy.
She, no, she, so the black, okay, so the dad is the bad guy.
Right.
Dad's brother.
Oh, I thought it was uncle. That was bad.
No, it's okay. His dad. Cool. So his uncle is related by blood.
Okay.
Aunt and daughter are aunt and daughter. So she took her daughter and was like, don't worry, I'm getting out of this situation. Mm. So don't, that cannot be used against you anymore. Like, if you want to get out from under your dad's thumb or whatever.
So
like,
auntie's an ally.
Yeah, auntie is a great ally. Okay, yes. Okay, great. And so he's like feeling good. He's like, okay, she's safe. I don't have to do any, I don't ever have to talk to my parents again. Like, this is great.
I don't have to protect her anymore.
Yes. And his dad immediately comes over and is like, what the fuck did you do? Like, I will always have power over you, blah, blah. Ugh. And he like beats him up. Melissa calls Maddie in the next chapter and she's like, I took him to the hospital.
Yeah.
He's not great, but he's not critical. He's so gonna dark. Be fine. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sorry. I tried.
It's not your fault.
And so
but whoever wrote this. No, I'm just kidding.
That's why don't ever read any like Motorcycle Club stuff. It's always gonna be super dark. Yeah. Or like that's
motorcycle,
pretty dark.
Yeah, motorcycle stuff tends to be darker.
I kind of like it.
The fuck is motorcycle stuff?
There's like a whole club, subgenre.
Like Sons of Anarchy, Sons like of motorcycle Anarchy. Game.
Okay.
That's it's a genre.
Got it.
Which I like.
Like not Hell's crazy. Angels moment.
Yes. Yes.
Like but
they protect
but like
their own.
The genre of like motorcycle. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
That's a whole.
So this is in that
universe. I
didn't
know if there was like a term I was missing where it's like, no. Oh, motorcycle stuff. Vroom, vroom.
It's like MC Club is usually like the series kind of thing. So his, and he's with his parents at the time. He freaks out. His parents and Maddie go to the hospital. Aww. They see Julian and Melissa tells them everything that happened. And Maddie is just like, fuck this. I'm going to find his dad and I'm going to kick his ass. And,
hell yeah.
And Maddie's dad is like, Maddie's dad is like, I'm coming with you.
Yeah.
This big ex-army guy.
I love Maddie's dad.
I do too.
And I need Nancy to be back there cheering him on. With the orange slices.
And I'm sure Nancy is like with Julian.
Water.
Yeah. She's oranges. Got the sword.
So,
yeah.
So they
she's
go to this
soccer mom. Yes. Football mom.
So they go to this big mansion and they find him. They corner him into this office. They basically like talk to him and like threaten him and scare him so much.
But rich people can't be bad parents.
What?
Yeah. They scare him so much that he wets his pants.
Wow.
Yikes.
Yep. And then Maddie's kind of like about to like start beating his ass. And his dad's like, no, son, we're better than that.
We've done enough.
Let's take a picture of him in his wet, wet pants.
Yeah.
Yep.
And they like see his mom on the way out. And Maddie's like, fuck you. You're a terrible mother and a terrible person.
Wow.
And she's like, so it's just, like, oh, fuck off.
Gross.
So Julian gets better. Maddie quits the university job. He quits the team or Julian quits the university job of being a masseuse. Yep. He's his own massage therapist now. Maddie quits the team. And at his last, at Julian's last like rub down special, he comes and he like picks up and he goes, sorry, like to the guys. He's like, what are you doing here? He's like, I'm picking up my boyfriend and we're going out. Woo! And he like officially like kind of comes out to his like social circle.
I would have had streamers.
And yeah! Fuck you. And he like throws
like
streamers
the Bo Burnham. Like one of those poppers. Like,
yeah. Yes. And he comes out to his teammates. And then basically 4 years later.
Diana Ross played in the background. This, royalty free.
Yes. Royalty free. This is when it gets into the stuff of, oh, I should. The stuff they say next is stuff that if you had read the rest of the series, you would understand more.
Uh-huh.
But they're saying 4 years later, like after we buried my parents. But don't worry. It wasn't actually my parents. We're like. And I go, okay, wait. So he thinks his parents died, but actually they went into hiding maybe with Zara, but he reunites with Zara.
I was going to say, did Zara
comes
come back?
Zara like, comes back.
This is 2 years before Zara. Zara was not even a fucking relevant character.
Yes. Also, and so it says 4 years later, he's with his sister.
Yeah, what is this fandom?
It's not a fandom. It's a Kindle.
It's just a novella.
What is the series called? Is what Julie's asking.
Oh, I didn't write it down, but it's like a motorcycle thing. I can find it though.
No, I don't. But, I was just curious.
4 years later, a bunch of stuff happens. Maddie reunites with his sister, and he asks Julian to marry him.
Oh, wow.
And they live happily ever after. Maybe I haven't read the rest of the series.
Cute. But,
I mean,
so that's.
Hopefully they wait until he's 23.
Maybe. And maybe. So that's coming out by Lila Rose.
Lila Rose.
And I just have like a little would you rather game. And so it's first. And these are not. These are They're so stupid. But okay, the first one was, would you rather make out like in the anteroom of the locker room with all of your like teammates still in there, or would you rather make out like in the kitchen of your parents' house?
Locker room.
Are my parents awake?
Well, I guess in this one, the parents left, but it's just the idea of being in the parents' house. Do,
parents if my parents house left, parents' house.
Yeah, yeah. Parents' house. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So if the people, no, I'm going to keep people in the locker room, I guess. So, yeah. I was going to say, I guess parents' house, because it'd be more like safe. Like, yeah, we wouldn't get interrupted.
Yeah.
But I think like the fun, like, ooh, this could happen. Like the dangerous element of the locker room is, yeah, sexier.
My parents are also predictable parents. Like, they have a pretty set routine.
Oh, you know, like, when they're coming. Shit, yeah.
You'll know where, they're, like, what they're doing.
If they're leaving the house, they've told me an exact time they'll be home, because that's when they'll be tired. So, yeah. It's easy for me to be like, okay,
fair,
cool.
Fair.
I'll free the kitchen up in 35 minutes.
And so, the next one is, would you rather be, like, the flirt in the relationship, or would you rather be the partner of the flirt?
Oh, both are fun.
As someone who is very flirty,
yeah,
I can't really admit, I mean, I guess I have dated people who are also flirty.
I'm flirty, and I date flirts and non-flirts. I prefer, yeah, to date the flirts one, because like we've mentioned before,
there's
the
an understanding,
it is kind, yeah, of sexy too, to be like, haha, mm-hmm, he still got it, and, yeah, that's hot. You get, yeah, to like see them in third person and like watch it, and you're like, ah, yeah, oh, that's usually me on the other end, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something really sexy about them getting it and not being jealous types, because, yeah, you can be like, bitch, you were talking like that, you were tapping Dana's shoulder at fucking whatever, you know what,
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Last one. Okay. Would you rather beat up Julian's dad, or would you rather scare him into peeing his pants?
Scare him into peeing his pants. Why would I exert energy, any more energy on this person than I need to? Because
it would make you feel good. Make you feel good. Like, physical things make you feel good.
Physical things make me
feel
good.
Rage rooms.
I feel like to scare him into peeing his pants, you got to be a little like, come in ready to fight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's different types of energy you're exerting.
I would much rather
you're a
psychologically intimidate someone, because I think it lasts longer.
That's fair.
And yeah, to me, I'm just not a big violence person, because, okay, I love boxing. Love it. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite, mm-hmm, things. I don't want to be hit, so I'll never really box. I'll, yeah, kickbox. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, I don't want to get, yeah, hit back. So my thing is, I'm so afraid of getting my ass beat,
right,
that I will never beat an ass.
I understand.
So
that.
I am strategically anti-violent, pacifist, all of those things, simply for self-preservation. Like, simply because I'm so afraid of getting hit in the face.
Yeah.
And it has nothing to do with, like, I know my own strength. I would beat the shit out of somebody. But if they hit me back, I don't like them.
I don't want
them. I want my teeth first. I like my teeth.
I was thinking, I kind of like the idea of, like, doing a psychological thing, but also getting, like, you turn to leave, and then you just smack it, like,
yeah,
right
just
in the face.
One good punch.
Like, I want one good punch.
I want to hold his arms back while his son punches him.
Yeah.
Like, I want the person, I want the catharsis of that, the vindication of it,
yeah,
all.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But like, that it's was, like, I didn't need to beat his ass, but if I saw what he did, I would have needed to beat his ass. You know? Yeah. Like, it's like,
yeah, you would feel it, but not want to do
great,
it.
Great. Would you rather? Great story.
Yeah. That was my story. Thank you. Thank you for coming on this journey with me. And that was that.
You know how many raccoons are here?
Yeah.
Yeah. Tell us how many, what your ratings for these stories.
Yours gets 5.
Mine gets 5?
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm giving it 5. I was immersed again.
The fanfic.
Yeah. It was a really good one.
It was
like, I would want to read that story.
It was believable. And I, yeah, like not having any context for it, but still felt like I did.
Yeah.
And maybe it is the whole David Tennant thing. But yeah, there was just something about it that just felt like a really beautiful, real story. I felt the emotions of all of them.
Thank you. I was worried, given such a big element of it was like the tweets and everything, that I wouldn't be able to say it properly. So I'm glad it landed.
Yeah,
yeah. It is a beautiful story.
It came through well.
I do highly recommend people
read it. It was really well written. Like, yeah, I was in it. Like, literally, I was calling out shit because I'm like, what? Nobody would act like that. And I'm like, oh, it's a story. She can write whatever she wants.
She can do whatever.
It's an alternate universe. Yours, I'm giving 3.
Okay.
Because it's a heavy one and it hurt my feelings.
But someone still came out.
Someone did.
That's the part.
Hey, your work, 5. You get 12 raccoons, okay? But the story itself, what it gave to me and my soul, I'd probably give it more of a 2, but
hurt.
I knew you'd be hurt about it.
Gave a little hurt.
Because you put so much work in that I gave you an extra raccoon, okay? Your first raccoon is from that first trash can you invested in, and he crawled over to your second trash can. Yeah.
This one, it was like a time-sensitive thing, and it, like, I just can't stress enough, like, how stressful it was. That's
honestly so funny. Yeah, just in general, the whole point and the reason I like listening to y'all is because I know you like reading it. Like, mm-hmm. so I don't want it to feel like work for you. I don't want it to. Yes. I know it will sometimes, period, because it is work, but you know,
it's fun work.
The point of it is this is the work you choose.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Was there anything from this episode, Julie, in life that you would like us to discover and talk about and enumerate on for the next episode?
As someone who was struggling with what a trope is, mm-hmm. I have gone down a rabbit hole of reading a bunch of different ones that I would be interested in general.
Okay. Ooh, okay.
And now, naturally, I am going to try to tie it back to what we've learned today. Mm. But first of all, I want to talk about WAFF. W-A-F-F.
What's that?
Warm and fuzzy feeling.
Oh, okay.
It's a
fluff,
fan
if you will.
Fiction
fluff.
Designed to be cute. Fluff. WAFF is what I found on this. And I really like that. And I feel like that's just a theme we've been talking about in general.
Yeah.
That's so something I'm gonna give that. You talk about and then you go cuckolding.
Also. Yeah, but also, give me the darkest.
But have it be fun.
So the go seduce my arch nemesis trope, which is exploiting your nemesis or your enemy and trying to seduce them into like whatever the fuck, just to like get back at them. And then, of course,
then
you
probably
know.
Falling in love. So basically an enemies to ish,
but,
ish.
A fun,
but it's more
a
it's, revenge. But it doesn't have to be enemies to lovers. It can just be
or like
one of them is in love. And
actually,
one of them is
there
like,
are a ton of sports books that are like that.
Really?
Like so and so dumped me.
The rival
I'm gonna
teammate.
Fuck his rival. Yes.
Oh, I was going to say it's giving like the Taylor Swift, Travis Kelce conspiracies. If you've read some of them,
no,
some of them are
they?
That Taylor Swift's dad is a fan of his opposing team,
the Eagles, yeah,
one of the opposing teams that Kelce's on, and so they're convinced that they're gonna go to the playoffs this year and she's gonna break up with him right before the playoffs. And like it's gonna be this whole
it's
thing.
A long con,
like a long con
that
for
would
dad.
Be
oh my
crazy
God.
And I would love to
and
hear
I'm
about
like,
that but I hope
that
I hope
that to me
her.
Is giving this like arch nemesis yeah. trope where it doesn't necessarily have to happen after like yeah. it doesn't have to be enemies to lover of
no,
course
no,
that
I know
could be a
mean.
Potential
yeah.
but I kind of like the idea that it was out of shystiness.
Yeah,
like,
I love
I
that.
Read a bunch like that, actually.
Okay, we're going to do that
can
one.
Can we do that one?
Yeah, seducing your arch
both
nemesis.
Both of y'all lit up, so I like that better, too. Okay.
Seducing an enemy. Let's do
seducing
it
an
more
enemy.
Vague.
Yeah.
Seducing an enemy.
Hey, Julie.
What are you in?
Hi, Erin.
Hi, Erin. I am currently reading a very, I want to call it boring, but it would seem boring to people who are. It's called Comedy Against Capitalism.
Wow.
Drink.
It's on
drink,
brand.
Drink.
It's on brand. It's this woman who, she's a comedian, and she talks about, it's honestly really brilliant so far. I'm barely into it, and I've already highlighted like 80% of it.
Wow.
But it's very much talking about how comedy is the antithesis of capitalism in a lot of ways because we look to joy and laughter and that industry on its own in a different light, and we need to take more of that into like how we treat capitalism so that we can all be successful and switch to a better system. But like there's I've so with my whole anti-capitalism things, it's been a journey because obviously you can't just like uproot a system, people will get hurt. It doesn't work like that. Nobody wants to change that quickly.
Yeah,
so I've been doing more research on like what do we actually fucking do as individuals, because I'm so tired of hearing we got to fix the system.
What is actually achievable on an individual level?
These are very cool books in between that are very much like, hey, this would be the in-between times. We've already got it in these different ways. This is how it shows up in your comedy world. This is already how it shows up in this world.
Uh-huh.
How can we
turn up the dial
a bit? Yeah, improve our community relationships. You know, every time you share your lawnmower with a neighbor, you're doing communism or whatever. Like,
hey, Emily.
Hey, yeah.
Wait.
So technically, nothing.
Ooh.
We love that for
Christmas
you.
Christmas burnt you out, huh?
Yeah, that's the double up.
Christmas really burnt me out. But I was trying to do that. I am literally, I've told this to like four people and I haven't done it yet. I'm about to start Fourth Wing, which has been a long time coming.
Yeah.
Yes, other things have gotten in the way, but it's literally on my bed, ready for me to start.
Got it.
And then the other night I was so tired that I was like, okay, I can't start this right now. I want to read something. But yeah. I'm like, I can't start a book that I know I will start reading for like hours.
Right.
So I started reading Finding Hermione again, which is one of my favorite fan fictions about an older Hermione, and Draco helps her when Ron cheats on her with Lavender Brown.
She always.
And typical. They have a brood of children. They just run up to them on the platform. It's a whole thing.
Typical Ron.
Hold on. I do want to bring up a trope I did not read today because I really loved it. And it was called Ron the Death Eater.
Oh, Ron the Death Eater.
And it says a nice character is perceived as being worse than they are in canon. So like I wouldn't hate that as a trope, like where it's like, you know, you're reading about a character where we usually like them and now we've
flipped it.
Or whatever. Like a Ron. People hate Ron.
I hate Ron.
I hate Ron in the sense of a Hermione fiction.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
In the movies,
it's always a very useful. Yes, device.
I
love.
I only read like Ron bashing fics usually.
That's funny. Great.
Nice. Hey, Jess. What are you reading?
I'm re-listening to the audiobook for A Court of Silver Flames.
Oh shit! Yeah, forgot to start that too.
Yes. But yeah, I'm about halfway through that, and then I'm also reading a Good Omens fanfic that I'm literally like a paragraph into, and it's called Petrichor and Parchment, wherein Aziraphale is a bookbinder and Crowley is a gardener in a small town. And that's all I know, and I'm very excited.
Those are really sexy professions.
I think it'll be very cute.
I think it's gonna be fun.
I think it's gonna be very fluffy and sweet, and it's one of the more popular ones in the fandom. So as I work my way through, I was like, okay, we'll check this one out. So
yeah,
that was good.
Yeah.
So join us next time
for seducing
your the enemy.
Seducing the enemy.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
This is going to be a fun one.
It's going to be good.
I'm excited.
All right.
Until then, we're just two raccoons.
Talking about
the best
trash in town.
Bye.
Stunning.
Femmes Reading Filth is hosted, produced, and edited by Emily Berusian and Jessica Mall. Intro music by Tom Lehrer. Outro music by David Reddick. You can follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok at Femmes Reading Filth. Thank you for listening.
Bye.
Bye.